let's not get, let's stop having that used to us in front of us. You know, we're so used to seeing it that it becomes, ah, yeah, more children died. No, yeah. Well, another wedding destroyed. And the apathy is what I want to see quenched. Because our apathy leads to fear in other people, and that fear is what, you know, causes us to lash out like the 200-year-old babies we are. Anyway, I'm sorry. Forget me.
Yep.
It just pissed me off.
I know.
It seems so fundamental to me. It's just basics. I mean, come on now. Come on. Wasting time.
Oh, by the way, News Ninja Susan has sent in a nomination of her own. She wants, she would like due consideration to be given to good old Thor.
To whom?
Thor.
Thor, oh, absolutely, yeah, we could use him.
Yeah, because he did the lightning bolt stuff pretty effectively, too.
So, yes, sir, plus he could drink the ocean, and maybe if he drank the ocean, he could then, you know, fill it back up, and it would be purified. We could do that. We could deal with that. That would fix the water. I might be a little pissed. See, he would handle the coal companies because he'd have to clean out those reservoirs, those slurry pits or what have you. He'd probably be a little pissed about that. He'd be cranky. You know, we need some old-fashioned gods. Give me some old-fashioned gods just for 3 years.
Yeah, a day or so. Just a day or so.
Yeah, all right. I'll even take that. I'll take a day because they can do a lot in a day. And we need that. We need, like, I mean, granted, these people are digging their own holes because they say nothing that makes sense. And I know I may say things sometimes that doesn't sound like they make sense, but it's sometimes when I'm talking to you, I'm talking to you about this conversation that you and I may have had 3 years ago. And it's just this big continuing web, so people go back to the archives and listen to all this stuff, and you'll see. Anyway, you know, when we sit here and look at these people that try to pass off these just egregious lies, you know, just, you know, that are just basically the same as the old runoffs of, you know, the checks in the mail and I won't in your mouth. That's what they're telling you when they say, oh, yeah, income disparity. You people are not even in the realm of income disparity. Bob, income disparity to me, I guess what it reads to my heart, is that you and I work in the same factory. You've been there a little longer than me. You make $350 more an hour or something along those lines. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, the income disparity is Bob has got more experience. He makes a little more money than me. It's justified. I understand it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Not, yeah, Bob's been here 3 years. He makes, you know, more money in 1 month than I can make in 3 years. Or even longer. You know what I mean? That's not income disparity. What are you doing with? Nobody needs that. And, you know, once again, this whole thing, like a lot of this, you know, green and, you know, revolution and all this other stuff that we have to go and deal with, you know, with our energy and, you know, all this other stuff, this all bases on, you know, how much petroleum is left. You know, we live in a society that, you know, corporations who never, have they ever behaved? Have they ever behaved in the right way?
No. Go back to the Dutch East India Company, yeah. The British West Indian. What? No.
Yeah. No.
No. I mean, great screw ups of corporate history. The Crown Corporation that colonized, you know, Jamestown. They sent people from inner city London. Who had no knowledge of farming or blacksmithing or much of anything, they sent them to the New World because they thought, and you know, what a classic paradigm of the extractive mono-economy, Albert. They sent these people, these desperate human beings, because this wasn't the, you know, the Puritans and those religious freaks that landed in Massachusetts Bay. This was a for-profit operation, and the reason they selected a bunch of people who had no clue about farming, no clue about sustainability, no clue about survivability, the reason they sent them is because they had it in their heads that they were going to go immediately to work in an extractive mono-economy digging gold. And that way, all they'd have to do would be to ship in the barrels of flour and a little bit of, you know, a little bit of money to pacify their slaves.
Yep, sugar and beads. Everything's okay. Maybe some whiskey, rum, what have you.
And life is good.
Now, isn't that a perfect parallel to these people of today? We've got plenty of oil. We need to be able to drill.
Yeah. Well, we got 1,000 years of coal left right here as long as we get Bluffmaker Mountains. And if we get to Bluffmaker Mountains, I can be sure that my great grandbabies and my great grandbabies' wives is going to be able to have tanning beds forever.
I'm gonna call y'all tonight.
Yeah, see?
I mean...
Oh, by the way, you have just re-earned... For your comment last night, what was it? Juan Williams level of disconnectedness. That one you last night's toaster, Albert, by the way. I'm late in telling you. But yes, you won last night's chromium plated zircon encrusted toaster.
Sweet.
And you have just upped the ante on your saginess too.
No, you really have,
because in the course of our conversation, I was able to register at ACEEE and get a look at the national map of the rankings for this scorecard for 2009. You know, the one where West Virginia Stan was tied with another Stan for 45th.
Alaska.
Right.
Yeah, Alaska Stan.
Alaska Stan, yes, we were tied with Alaska Stan.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But you were right. Lo and behold, there sits glorious Wisconsin, 11th.
Yep.
You said it's got to be somewhere near the top 10, probably a little bit behind Minnesota. So there sits Minnesota at 8,
yep.
And there's Wisconsin at 11. And, you know, I'm sorry, but your Sage of Southwest Wisconsin factor just went through the roof.
Well, I'll tell you what, I just got to say, it's a nice.
Just don't put the sage in the toaster. It smells good for a little while, then it gets a little rank.
You got to clean it, and that is true. Absolutely, you got to get a little. But I'll tell you honestly, the only reason I can make a guess like that is because I've seen it. You know, I mean, and I've brought this parallel up a few times. Yours is certainly a few orders of magnitude worse, in my opinion, what's going on in West Virginia compared to what's going on here in this driftless region. But in our driftless region, it's a very sensitive, ancient ecosystem that, you know, a lot of the people that live here are a little bit more progressive in that respect. You know, and plus they're from Norway and Sweden. And in Norway and Sweden, they're conservatives, like their right-wing whack jobs make our Democrats look like Republicans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, we got some of that genetic stock over here. And they do, they go, well, why should, if the wind's blowing, I should have a, and I'll just put up a windmill. And they do that. And that's what, you know, is going on. I would just love to see what's going on maybe in the top five state.
Hey, you know, well, you know why Minnesota was only eighth? I can tell you why. Minnesota was only eighth because Michelle Bachmann all by herself is good for a 4-point drop.
Absolutely.
And I got the proof.
Well, we got Sensenbrenner here in Wisconsin, though, so...
Well, see, and you're not in the top 10. See?
No, I'm telling you. He's a filthy pig.
But I got some proof here. They took the straps off and took the Hannibal Lecter cage off of her face and let Michelle Bachmann out for a little bit today.
No!
Oh, but they did. This is the woman who wants Steve King, R. Crazy, to run for president. She said that recently.
Good, me too.
Yeah, come to think of it.
Yeah.
Because I don't care how bad off America is. When the debates are going on and he whips out the cobra to give it a good handling, and you know, there's some damn fine strychnine, and starts speaking in. Yeah, there you go. Oh, it's another, it looks like a landslide for Obama. But they did. They took all the accoutrement off of her today and let her go and do a radio interview with none other than Laura Ingraham.
Oh, yeah.
Another winner. Yeah, this is where you crank. Yeah, you do that very well. Were you on the original recording? Oh, yeah.
Chickadee-cha.
Anyway, they let her on the air with Laura Ingraham, and this is too precious to pass up, Albert. And frankly... Hearing you scramble to chase down your fleeing sanity is just so damn good on the radio that I can't pass up the opportunity. I'm not trying to use you or anything, but
no, that's what I'm here for.
Okay, so
least special
this is now wait this is a conversation just to do the setup real quick.
Let me lay down.
Yeah, don't sit. Lay down. Get prone. You know, make sure the blood is flowing well all over your body.
My feet are elevated. I'm laying on my workout.
Yes, exactly. You're learning. God, can't get anything past you.
I keep the arms up.
Now, I don't know what she has to do with why you would want to ask her about this, but Michelle Bachmann was called upon to define what it is that has made Bob Dole and that crazy liberal Bill Frist want to get out there and endorse the Senate's transparent coffee the health care bill. You know, because, of course, this is communism, right? I mean, we understand this is communism.
Oh, absolutely. That's volunteerism. Right. It's communism.
Yeah. So, Michelle Bachmann, and, you know, really, after you hear this, you're going to realize because this is the woman who's, if you, how can I put this, Albert? If you live in a state and you, as a voter, live in a district where you have deliberately sent someone to the Congress who says that CO2 is good for the planet because it's natural, you are never going to see the top five in the energy efficiency rankings. It just can't happen.
Bob, I just had a little vision. Can I just interrupt?
Yes, please.
We need to take Michelle Bachmann, put her in a cage, back in the cage in the mask, and send her to North Korea with a little note saying, listen, we'd really love to get along with you guys, but you act like this lady. This is how you look to us. And then, like, you know, pull string, and then she comes out, and she's like, I'm coming, I'm it. You know what I mean?
Oh, Jesus, it'd be the ransom of Red Chief all over again.
Take her back. We give up.
Nah, you got to pay, sweetheart.
We don't want to look like that. Nobody wants to look like that. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, but no, you're
really get my blood going.
No, you're so very right. You absolutely are.
Well, we're at war with her down here, so, and that's, you know, she's calling everyone to arms out here.
Right, right.
You know, kill the liberals, and, well, we're in Wisconsin, and south, you know, we're near Madison, and you know what that means.
A los mercados americanos. Vámonos.
a lot of Che shirts out here, you know, Che or whatever.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
So she's declaring who is and ain't sufficiently in favor of freedom. Just let it be her.
Really special in that scenario. But we are different. We're different. We've always been a fabulous country, and all the rest of the world has wanted to be like the United States.
You know, this is one of those moments when I miss Peter Gottwald. We've always been a fabulous country.
Fabulous.
That is, you know, and that's Laura Ingraham, but never mind.
They're doing everything they can to have us be the post-American.
You know what else I love is that Democrats always point to Republicans who...
Oh, wait! That was Michelle Bachmann using the word fabulous.
Yeah. I was about to say, Bob. Mm-hmm. I'm a little crazy. I ain't that crazy.
Yeah, okay. But anyway, I'm ruining this. Here we go.
You know, end up losing as models. Well, that's a model for what we want in Republicans. Yeah.
Well, of course, it keeps them in dominance.
You know,
of course.
God bless Bob Dole. He just came on our show. I have great respect for the man and also for Frist. I mean, but Frist presided over a pretty disastrous situation in the
Senate.
They lost. Bob Dole lost how many times on a national level? I mean, I guess I've lost count. But, again, nothing against him personally, but that ideology and that Republican outlook has been a losing outlook. That's why President Obama wants more of us to be like them.
Because we want a pro-freedom agenda. And he's trying to throw people around who he believes will increase a non-pro-freedom agenda.
Okay, tell me what you think about this New York...
That's right. Bob Dole and Bill Frist are part of a non-pro-freedom agenda.
You know...
First of all, can we have a language moment, Albert?
Yeah, please.
What the is a non-pro-freedom agenda? I mean, I was just getting my head around the gay agenda. But a non-pro-freedom agenda, wouldn't that be an anti-freedom agenda?
I think so.
But she can't say anti-freedom because that just makes her look a little more batshit crazy.
Yeah.
So now it's a non-pro-free... Oh, Mrs. Orwell.
We need, you know what we need? I don't know if you've seen the show Heroes. We need Siler to cut the top of her little head off and dig her out, because he figures out how things work. Because I don't understand her. programs to train pilots. Like,
I don't think she'll ever be an airline pilot.
I don't think so. She's seriously, I mean, and both of them. You know, it's like, yeah, all right, great. And I'm giving the point. I'm going to just cease the point to them that, well, yeah, the reason why Bob Dole and, you know, they don't win is because they're not as right-wing, you know, as you guys are. You know, like, you know, Bob Dole, at least, he, you know, say what you want about him. He kind of was of an old school Republican in a way. You know what I mean? Not like these new ones. I mean,
you know, I guess it's retraction time on the horn.
Mm.
But Albert, I despised Bob Dole. He was.
Yeah, I hear you. Absolutely.
He was meaner than a snake with his tail stepped on. All right.
All right, but.
But,
go.
Right,
go.
25 years, a little bit of that perspective thing, and all of a sudden,
yeah.
Bob Dole looks like a guy you could do business with.
You could talk to him, maybe.
Bob Dole doesn't like that liberal proposal. Yeah, but Bob, it'll be good for the country. Bob Dole likes the country.
Exactly. Yeah, Bob Dole doesn't want to be in the bottom of a dugout with the only person alive left on. Yeah, Bob Dole doesn't want that. Okay, Bob, in your least, you may be able to be a pilot.
Yeah, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, no, these people they're sad. They're just sad. And like, they just become more and more irrelevant and entrenched and... Like, I think in the whole, like, humanity is starting to walk around looking for answers. I mean, the soliloquy of the cave again. We're starting to get people to, there is no chain. To turn around, we don't have to go down this route.
It's, right, it's the Gary Larson cartoon where the trained bears in the circus have suddenly removed their muzzles. One bear looks at the other, standing there with a muzzle in his hand. One bear looks at the other and goes, hey, wait a minute, these things just snap right off.
I love
you. You know, we have that opportunity, but I tell you, but there's only a little bit more than a minute of it left. This is such high quality, multi-million dollar per year radio. We gotta let it finish.
Okay. Right.
Because this is gonna be turned into one of those saucer of milk for table two, catty moments.
really? Ooh, okay, yeah, play out.
Yeah, here we go.
District race, where you have a conservative party, Hoffman, against the Republican in name only, Scoza Fava, who's pro-abortion, who's I don't care what tax pledge she signed, not good on this health care reform issue, and is wobbly on a whole host of other issues, and New York Working Families Party is endorsing her, Big Acorn affiliate.
The race is a mess right now. What I read is that the Republican-endorsed candidate is actually number three. The Democrat is number one, and the conservative Republican, Hoffman, as I understand, is number two. I think we still have a real chance of winning this race, and I encourage people to get involved.
Who's we winning, the Republican or the conservative?
Well, right now the Democrat is winning.
Well,
and Hoffman is number two. Hoffman is the one.
Who do you want to win, Congresswoman? Don't spin me, girl.
Hoffman is on the ascendancy, and we have to win the seat, and people need to get behind the winning candidate, and it looks like that's Hoffman.
Oh, okay, so I'm taking this as Michelle Bachmann, my favorite agitator from Minnesota, is endorsing the Conservative Party candidate in New York. He's the winner here. I mean, he is fights for this country.
It appears that he has the best chance
right
now.
But he's not going to have the best chance if people like you
don't
get behind him.
If they don't get involved.
Yeah.
And so people...
And, yeah, and so it goes on a little bit later, and she complains about the hate mail she's getting, and she said, Nancy Pelosi's made me a top target, and then I wish I had it, I don't. Laura Ingraham begin talking about making Nancy Pelosi while making hissing and cat noises and shrieking, she doesn't like powerful women.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, wait. We got it. You got it. Never mind the description. This is precious.
You get a lot of hate mail after the New York Times piece? Did you get a lot of hate mail every day?
Laura, my mailbox is always full.
Yeah.
It is always full. And I think, again, it's because Nancy Pelosi has made me about her top target. And through every vehicle that there is out there, and people are coming after me.
Yeah, she doesn't like powerful women.
But isn't it interesting? Her book, when it came out the first week, sold 2,737 copies, as opposed to Sarah Palin's book, which is off the charts right now, or any book written by Laura Ingraham.
Wow.
God.
The talent that is required to do for-profit terrestrial right-wing radio is beyond comprehension, isn't it, Brother Albert?
You have to have it on loan from God.
With half your brain tied behind your back.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're...
Breathe, Albert. Breathe. Let him go now. Letting everything go.
Yeah.
And see, I've already been warned. Maura just wrote in to say, any more of Laura Ingraham or batshit Bachman, and my ears are going to bleed. Have mercy. Stop.
Oh, you're not alone. Hey, you're on the horn. This is the conduit for what needs to get done. Yeah. Got it. So yeah, you gotta brave them slings and arrows. They're just ridiculous, aren't they? Just ridiculous. My goodness gracious, they're so insignificant too. And that's what pleases me at night. Is I know that they're just that. You know, they're going head, straight on. They're just gonna keep going straight on. You know, rape the earth. Pillage and, loot other countries that are, not your religion. Like that mindset that, that little glimpse of a universe that existed, 2001, late after September 11th, 2001, 2002, 2003, and 2004 starts, closed down. That little, remember everybody had their flags in their cars and, and duct tape on
them. I'm proud to be an American.
Yeah. And, because they say they're free, even though, they talk freedom. Like, it just makes me turn around. Am I really standing here listening to this? Are you serious? But where were you these 8 years? The Bush administration, Obama needs to start clamping down and throwing away a lot of these powers that the Bush administration seized. I'd love to see him do that, especially before this next election. That would show, I think, the base here, that he's kind of serious. Yeah, listen, I have to use a couple of these tools to clean up the mess that the guy who made these tools available created. And now that this stuff is kind of, I think it'll start to simmer down if he takes the right approach. And, the world will start calming down a little bit because we're going to start having to become, instead of being preoccupied with, terrorism and war and so on and so forth, we're going to have to put, wouldn't it be great if Afghanistan had windmills as well and solar panels like Africa? Yeah, wouldn't it be great that,
Maybe that's the way you begin the healing?
You would think.
You don't set up a power company to charge Afghanis for their electricity. You electrify the company. You turn on the lights, and you don't send a bill.
There you go. And the thing is the development.
And you let the government do it, and then the disaffected Afghanis go, hey, maybe we want to be behind this government because we've got running water and lights now.
And clean water because we have unlimited power. And it's clean power. And we don't have to sit here and worry about, this and that and that and this and this and another thing. When we go into Afghanistan, what's their big plan for Afghanistan? The gas pipeline and the poppy fields. And now, you and I didn't talk before we went to Afghanistan, but we talked fairly thereof, and what happened? Poppy production goes up and up and up. Now what's going on, right? The right wing's all like, the Taliban are using heroin to, to win the war.
And you just want to go, no, really?
Yeah.
Well,
you think you give these people an alternative? What do you think they're going to do? I don't understand that whole, you go into a village. This is why were the Viet Cong, in Vietnam against us? Why were the villages against us? Because you'd go into these villages and burn them down and shoot people and shoot their pigs and urinate in their rice paddy, everything you do. You sit there and do it and put bodies and all these things. And then you wonder why of course they're not going to want to be friendly with you. Of course they're going
to. We need to win the hearts and minds.
Yeah, and candy bars and cigarettes don't do that. If somebody wants to put a beat down on you, right? And they give you a cigarette, you smoke it and then you give them a beat down. maybe. Or you put it behind your ear, beep them down, then smoke it. I mean, come on now. It's just fundamental street. And these, well, the Republicans, they don't go on the street very much, do they?
Yeah,
they've never
so
really been out there. They like to pretend like they're tough. You know, they like to pretend like, you know, they, like Michael Savages of the world, they talk like they have an accent, like they've been out on the street, like they've, you know, been in a fight. I'll wager that that's not the case.
No. The only fight that the Savage Wiener ever got in was back when his father was abusing him, and these are his own admissions. Yeah, he is an abused child who is still working through it. Hey, Albert, got to roll along. Got some blinking lights, but man, dandy good. And hey,
always, bro,
you know,
always.
You're 11th.
Take it up. Hey, 11, and moving on up. And you're 45, but we got potential there.
Yeah.
Everybody else, see, you know, you'll see. They go, I want that too. And we'll get that. Don't worry, brother.
We'll
get you.
All right. Later, Albert.
All right.
Bye now.
Later, brother.
And marching through the lights. Hey, welcome to the program. Brian?
Hey, how are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good.
So you had to psychologically torture me as well by playing that Laura Ingraham interview with Michelle Braindead?
Yeah, just love it.
Or for so they won't think I'm insulting her. For all the Fox viewers, any right wing listeners out there, for the girl with the cave for a cerebellum, she's got an empty opening cave, the size of a cave in her cerebellum, where there should be a cerebellum.
Yeah, well, I know you can hold a lighted candle at one side of Michelle Bachmann's head and blow it out through the other ear.
Right.
Just,
and you know,
and you're not trying to be sexy or anything. Just and watch the and watch the flame go out.
Yeah. No way. Yeah. Your last Albert was just talking about your earlier in your call with, talk with him. You know that you know with these wars without end we now have all under the pretext of the phoniness and the horrible tragic Greek tragic comedy. They talk about Plato's cave. There was the phony September 11th attacks with the stand down orders, etc. I'd go through the, I tell that to everybody that I can, that don't get caught up in the news cycle. Don't keep repeating news about the balloon boy or, you know, whatever the latest chit chat is on the television corporate news.
Yeah, that's being hustled as news, right.
Yeah, I'm going back to just before the election of this allegedly president of change back in October of 2008. I keep this in with all my September 11th information there because this is the kind of thing that allows us to keep the military-industrial complex well-fed for an enemies out there that don't even exist. And, you know, it's about the dedication of the USS New Hampshire Virginia-class submarine. It's on the October 26th New Hampshire Sunday News. And 3,000 people attend. A flock of seagulls soared overhead as cannons fired in 130.
Real seagulls, not the cheesy 80s band, right?
No.
Okay.
134 officers and crew prepared to bring life to the USS New Hampshire. In a moving ceremony steeped in Navy tradition, New Hampshire's namesake submarine was officially commissioned yesterday before a crowd of more than 3,000 family members, dignitaries, and others. It goes on from there. But some kids from it's fairly nearby local high school and a middle school there in Farmington, New Hampshire, they lobbied the Navy to get the submarine named after the state of New Hampshire. And according to the Navy Admiral Kirkland Donald, he spoke to the crowd and said, this ship, the New Hampshire, has no limits in its potential and its ability to carry on the task and writing and adding stories to the book of history. These stories will not just be part of America's or the Navy's history, they'll be part of New Hampshire's rich and honorable story, end quote. But mostly it'll be for the profits of corporations like Halliburton and the rest. He didn't say that, but that's... That's implied. I'm very happy for the kids there that they have this submarine. I'm a veteran. It turns out that one of the crew members is Tom Chase of Farmington, New Hampshire. He says it's nice to see the community coming out to support us. He was a 2001 graduate of Farmington High School, and Chase's wife Jessica was there. But also who was there? God love her, but I think they're really using. They use that day endlessly for war profiteers. God love her, the Cheryl McGinnis of Portsmouth, whose late husband was a co-pilot of Flight 11 on one of the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center. stands next to Senator Olympia Snowe, Republican Maine, during the commissioning of the Virginia-class nuclear submarine. And it said that it goes on from there. Senator Judd Gregg addressed the crowd, et cetera. But they continually use that, this bread and circuses in the military. We do have the most powerful military by far on Earth, in spite of what the corporations is, the private contractors bleed out of us. The fact is, it was so much. One of the high school kids, the end of the story here, Cameron Paulzinski, was also impressed by the ceremony. He says he and his brother Matthew helped lead the push for the naming of the sub. And to quote Cameron, he says, "When you see all the admirals walking out," he said, "it takes your breath away." End quote. And that's what we become to it. Just the Romans were no less. They had grand, even as they were falling as an empire, they had the most powerful military, unquestionably, on Earth. And their grand parades were not. If you ever see the movie Cleopatra and Anthony starring, of course, Elizabeth Taylor and Richard Burton, I think that was her best film, Liz Taylor, but that's another matter. And Burton wasn't a bad portrayal of Mark Anthony. But you see that kind of great parade and great show of power. But the fact is, we're an empire. We're a corrupt, corporatized empire now. We're doing nothing but evil, basically, worldwide. We haven't fought a good war since, I'm sending my father a couple of more of his history books there. Since World War II, he fought all over North Africa, Sicily, and Italy. And we haven't fought a good war since then. This book, The Day of Battle, Rich Atkinson, The War in Sicily and Italy, 1943-1944, America's Last Good War, I would call it. It just the horses of the sea, the horses of the sun, it's from the opening chapter, page 60, Across the Middle Sea, which is the Mediterranean, about General Patton, a man who I didn't agree with much of him, but he had the right idea about conservatives. He muttered under his breath a few times that there was not much difference with them though, and the fascist Nazi officers that he was killing and imprisoning and capturing. But in field order number one, this is just on the eve of the invasion of Sicily, Bob, in July 1943, Patton advises the commanders, attack both by day and night to the limit of human endurance and then continue to attack. For the troops, he composed a gassy exhortation that now was read from quarterdecks across the entire fleet. It said, General Patton, when we land, we will meet German and Italian soldiers whom it is our honor and privilege to attack and destroy. The glory of American arms, the honor of our country, the future of the world rests in your individual hands. See to it that you are worthy of this great trust. God is with us. We shall win. End quote. And that goes back as Patton brooded and paced about his last meeting with Eisenhower. And then Eisenhower told Patton, you are a great leader, but a poor planner. He says to General Patton, and goes on about it. Though I disagree with that many things, and even the George C. Scott portrayal of it shows a mercurial and it possibly very much like Winston Churchill, my fellow manic depressive. General Patton may well have been a very mentally ill man, very much. But that was our last good war. That it was after September 11th. If you believe at all, as I believe it's the official fable now, what happened according to the official accounts of the September 11th attacks, we had countries like Iran on our side. They were mourning in the streets for 2 and 3 weeks and longer in Tehran and all over that country. They know what the war is to lose huge amounts of human beings, and they had just suffered through the Iran-Iraq war, etc. They know war going back to the ancient Persians, the battle, like you were talking about, the ancient Greek lads there, who are our forebearers, but who, when if they look 2,400 years in the future at us today as being their so-called, descendants, they wouldn't want any part of us. They'd rather try to give it to maybe the Chinese, the greatest civilization of China, which was also ancient at the time of ancient Greece. Maybe they can finally get a democracy back along with their people, because their workers are willing to rise up and fight for what's right, unlike the United Auto Workers making their deal with Ford Motor Company to not allow strikes for 5 years, basically. I know I can't cover everything I want to cover, but...
Do a pretty darn good job, Brian.
Okay, but that leads me to this thing, it's progressive paper In These Times, and it's also Working in These Times, a website by Jeremy Gantz. It provides independent scholarship about labor. The labor news used to be a part of, Tom Hartman's always brought that up, the labor column used to be a big part of the business news every day. Now it's just Wall Street and these big shot CEOs, this Lloyd Blankfein of CEO of Goldman Sachs. It looks, it looks like a pig. He's got that same look on his face as Lawrence Silverstein, the owner of the World Trade Center at World Trade Center 7, which was hit by no planes and had very, very tiny fires in it, and yet they took it down by demolition, in imploded demolition on 5:20 p.m. on that afternoon. They knew it was coming down. Giuliani knew way ahead of time. That's where his emergency center was, but Giuliani knew for hours ahead of time and from the morning of that day that he shouldn't go in there and use that for his center because it's Silverstein's bunch of criminals is going to take that down. That included, no doubt, that Marvin Bush and the rest who were in charge of security, quote-unquote, at the World Trade Center, right up to it, including the day of the attacks. But Lawrence Silverstein in the documentary 911 Mysteries about the implosions of the Twin Towers that happened before the explosion were happening below the ground, just minutes before the actual first plane hit the first tower, according to many witnesses, workers that have worked there for years, not just Willie Rodriguez, that janitor who saved so many lives, but many witnesses there, that I would say there's thousands of people that were on scene there that were witnesses that they knew the explosions were going out that had nothing to do with any plane crashes, and that the our own military explosive experts had any scientist, not just Stephen Jones at Brigham Young University, but they know that those explosions are the stuff of cordite and of thermite and thermate, which is a very exotic form of explosive material that the civilian demolition companies, you know, that most of them are family owned and for very respectable businesses. I don't consider them to have any blame in the September 11th demolitions. I believe it was military teams that did this. But and all the people who were coming in there for weeks before the September 11th dates, and the white powder was everywhere from the heavy work they were doing. And they show how they implode a building. They drill into it where they put the sticks of dynamite, the sticks of thermite, and they show how they become just magicians that they can almost do it at will. And taking down these huge buildings, including these white elephants, they were the Twin Towers and the World Trade Center 7 were the three buildings that Lawrence Silverstein owned. Those are the three buildings, the only three that fell down on steel towers on that day of September 11th. They're still the only steel buildings in history to have collapsed completely due to fire. No other building has. All the World Trade Center 3, 4, 5, and 6 were they were more directly under the debris that fell, that massive debris we all saw from the towers 1 and 2. And yet most of their structure remained standing. The fact is, in Lawrence Silverstein, they showed him at his, where he gets the $8 billion in insurance money, and this was from, he buys it in spring up until July of 2001, from a $14 million investment in the World Trade Center. He gets an $8 billion payout. And I looked at that man's face, and there was just something, I just didn't trust in that man's facial expression. There was something evil there. I don't know how else to put it.
You know, I understand.
And it's the same kind of thing that people live that we remain numb to it, and we feel good about the New Hampshire submarine dedication, and God love Miss McGinnis there, who lost her husband there, I believe, due to the stand down orders. That's why, they wouldn't have even, if it had been President Gore, who was really elected, if they had honestly voted.
That's another one of those American moments, Brian. That's another one of those American moments of what if. The fact of the matter is, had we had President Gore in the Oval Office on September the 11th, 2001, I have no doubt whatsoever but that there would have been no September the 11th, 2001, and it would just be another date on the calendar. Brian, I got to roll on, brother.
Okay.
All right.
Take care, sir. Have a good night.
You too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
I want to say hello and let you know I just searched you on YouTube, and I saw that they had footage of your Netroots Nation talk. That the audio could have been better for sure, but...
Yeah, that was just the raw microphone on the camera itself.
Okay. Good. I was happy to see something of you up there and something promoting the show as well, kind of like a minute-long promo for the network. So it would be fun to see things like that kind of go, you know, get passed around on the Internet. It's a good way to make people aware of the program.
And in fact, if you go on from that one Netroots Nation piece, you can find Jeff Biggers' remarks as well, and Lorella Scarbrough's, and Stephanie Pistello's, and the whole thing taken together from beginning to end. Well, I was very privileged that the people who came, Jeff and Stephanie and Lorella, did in fact agree to do so, because they are magnificent human beings.
Excellent. I look forward to checking that out. Also saw some other lectures recently by some other wonderful, interesting human beings. The Bioneers Conference took place last weekend.
Yes. I was aware of that. I believe we had someone out there who actually attended it.
Oh, good. Good. I've been streaming some of that material for those in your audience who aren't familiar with it. The Bioneers are kind of it's a gathering of some of the really interesting activists and scholars and business people, some business people, too, who are doing really hopeful work. Everybody from Michael Pollan, who's done so much good work on the food system, to there's a woman named Janine Benyus. Do you know her, Bob? She does the work on biomimicry.
No, but enlighten me.
Well, she's been looking into how nature can answer so many questions, like things regarding how to, like they asked, how does nature make things kind of adhere to each other without toxins? And they started looking at this weed and how it kind of with these other like seed pods and attached to it. And I forget which weed it was, but by studying it, engineers came up with Velcro. So there are ways in which products are coming out of what we can see in nature. And also there's a way, like people are looking into paint, are looking at these butterflies in South America, where it isn't a matter of a pigmentation on their wings, these blue morpho butterflies, but rather how it refracts light. And so...
Oh, wow. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, she's been talking about the stuff. It seemed very fringy 20 years ago, but now she's getting invited into government offices and CEO boardrooms and stuff like that. And she's very hopeful. It's interesting. She actually was involved with a children's CD to teach kids about this stuff. And the CD she was a part of, it's called Ask the Planet. And it's called A Musical Celebration of Nature's Genius. And among the people who performed on it are Bruce Coburn and Ani DeFranco. And
oh, my.
Yeah, yeah, Brandi Carlile.
And speaking of music, do keep an eye out, Preston, for the companion disc to the documentary Coal Country. There will be soundtrack discs of music that doesn't necessarily appear in the film, but magnificent music it is. And I've been hearing a lot about it along the way, so that should be hitting shelves sometime in the fairly near future.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I just noticed on my Facebook homepage where I can see what my friends are posting about, one of your listeners, Nick, I'm not remembering his last name.
Regalado,
yeah. He just posted something about that soundtrack. Yeah, I'll certainly look for that. Yeah, and that's another thing about Bioneers. They mix. It's not just lectures. It's music and it's art, it's theater, it's food, it's a lot of things. And they have a couple thousand people in California to go to their main meeting place, but then they do these satellite showings, streaming it to other cities, about 20 other cities at the same time. So material's getting around. Another guy who speaks there is somebody involved with green chemistry, a professor at Yale University. And Yale, in some ways, is the belly of the beast. I mean, so much of us, when we think of Yale, we think of, skull and bones and...
an article asking why birth control isn't being talked about within the parameters of reducing greenhouse gases. And he called it a thought experiment. And so Rush took that and used and extended it to say that the writer of the article should therefore commit suicide to cut down on carbon emissions.
You know, all these people in these stations across the country that air this stuff, I mean, I hope it's difficult for them to drive into work each day, you know, and to know that they're a part of this disgusting, what is it? Ugly political theater, you know. It's just remarkable. Interestingly, a friend of mine, and again back to Facebook, a friend of mine sent me a link from a friend of his called into Limbaugh's show and actually got through. His name is Dwight. And it was a recent call from, I think, about 3 weeks ago. And Rush gave him time, which was unique. And, you know, before he even took the call, Rush played something from, I think, some CNN commentators. And there it was two women, I forget who, but they made a comment about how some people feel Rush is like a bully and that his listeners, his fans, are the sort of people who would be in the schoolyard and kind of hover around the bully seeking protection, you know?
Right, exactly.
The bully too, and they seek also kind of power through the bully. They're weak, pathetic individuals themselves oftentimes, but, you know, Rush is their proxy, their strong man that they look up to. But I thought it was interesting, though, that he gave this person time. I think that's a reflection of his handlers, you know, and, you know, the stations and stuff, maybe feeling some popular pressure to give people some space on this forum that's been monopolized by him and by these, you know, the gladiator contests. You know, the pro and the sports fanaticism. Again, I enjoy sports. I played sports a lot, primarily soccer. But sports fanaticism is a huge problem. It cultivates a pattern of thinking that's unhealthy, kind of jingoistic dominator narratives, and just the emotional energy invested in it and the money. It's, you know, if we could have a tenth of that sort of attention put into, oh, you know, the environment or labor issues or whatever, we could get a lot done for sure. But, I don't know. Maybe there's some pressure. I'm hoping there's some pressure developing within these systems. And I also see that programs like Democracy Now! Keep growing. Now they're on over 800 stations around the country. So, I don't know. It's the best of times and the worst of times, to borrow a line, that's for sure.
Yeah, all of the above. Hey, Preston, it's great to hear from you. I hope you won't be such a stranger. I was checking the chat room just a couple of minutes ago, and they said you were conjured because they were talking about you in there, I think, just last night.
Okay, one last quick comment.
Sure.
back to Michael Moore's film, Capitalism. The one other thing I liked about it a lot is that he included a couple of examples of an alternative. One was a place called, I think, Alvarado's Bread Company, and it's kind of cooperatively owned, and even the line workers, they make pretty much the same thing as the top person, and their line workers at this bread company in California, they're making like $60,000 a year. And then they also had an example of, I think, a computer chip company in Michigan, also a cooperative, complete worker participation in the decisions. And this comment from one of the workers about how, you know, we don't have some big CEO outsourcing everything and taking all the profits because, you know, we're sitting across from the table from each other. And if one person tried to, you know, make 400 times the amount that we are making, we'd be like, why is this guy so freaking greedy? And, you know, it's just a laughable notion to let that happen in a cooperative structure, in a structure that works. It's a very profitable company. So, anyway, if people get a chance, definitely check out Michael Moore's film and support his important work. But, yeah, I won't be a stranger. I'll probably be calling you again maybe this Friday, Bob.
Okay, good to hear from you. Take care, Preston.
You too, man.
Bye. All right, bye. Calling from Denver, that's Preston. Good to hear from him. You know, we worry if you don't check in. We do. We really, really do. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
I got you fine.
All right. I just want to make this, I'll try to be quick tonight. I don't want to run over the end of your program like I did last night. Sorry about that. But I said on Monday that I'd try to call in every day this week. I missed the first, like, 2 or 3 minutes of your show tonight. So I don't know if you mentioned this, but wasn't today the day that the horn would have went dark had we not...
Yes. Yes, it was. I didn't mention it, and I guess I was subconsciously trying not to, but yes, it was.
Well, okay, sorry. I'm not trying to bring up...
No. It's just, you know, the horror.
Yeah, I'm not trying to conjure negative thoughts, but, you know, that kind of thing just isn't lost on me. You know, I saw today, oh, it's the 21st. Why does that date stick in my mind?
Why does that mean something? Yes.
Right. So, okay, so I thought it was today. So I just want to make it clear to people that the horn recently had a near death experience. Okay, the horn recently had a near death experience. Fortunately, you know, a lot of folks contributed and got it over the hump, so we avoided it. But had we not been able to pull the funds together from the audience, today
would have been good night.
Today would have been death day. Today would have been death day, but instead of mourning death day, you know, we're getting ready to celebrate the horn's 4th birthday on Saturday, correct?
Yes.
So Saturday the horn will be 4, and next week it'll be kicking off its 5th year. So, I don't want to harp on this too much because I did it the last 2 nights, and if I can, I'll do it the next 2 nights.
Yeah, but you said you were going to do it every night, so...
I know.
You're not harping.
I don't want people to turn, you know, change their, you know, internet channel or whatever, I don't know. Well, I don't know how you say change the channel on the internet, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
Would you say small, medium-sized group of people that contribute to keep this thing going?
Yes.
It's not a large number.
No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
Okay. And I'm one of those people. I just want to make it sure that I'm not pitching this or, you know, bitching about this because I'm resentful. I'm. It makes me feel good to contribute to the horn. And, you know, if you're someone who listens all the time, you might have heard me mention, I don't know, a week or so ago, that, you know, up until about maybe 2 months ago, I was taking a little 4 or 5 month break from politics, activism, listening to the horn, and all that, just because I had some, you know, personal things I had to straighten out, you know, some issues with depression and whatnot, and it was just a little bit too much. But when I said I took a break, the one thing I did not take a break from was contributing. I kept, you know, via PayPal, sending in my contribution to the horn every month because I wanted it to be there when I got back because I knew eventually I'd get my head back in the game and I'd want to come back and, you know, not pull up the stream and find nothing.
Beep. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, that's how much it means to me, for what it's worth. So, I just want to ask, you know, anyone who listens live, anyone who podcasts, anyone who listens to the rerun stream, do you appreciate this enough? I mean, is it, because all I'm asking, this isn't some grand scheme to solve the Horns' funding issues indefinitely, because God knows I'm not the kind of person you'd want to ask for something like that. You know, I'll mention again, David from Maine has, you know, he's trying to set up the Horn auctions to raise funds that way, and you and Guy are always doing your thing, trying to secure sources of funding. You know, this isn't that. It occurred to me, because of the near-death experience the Horn had this month, that, you know, set you back in the regular month-to-month funding, and then, of course, the birthday is Saturday. It just occurred to me, is it really that hard for people who listen, who appreciate this, just to contribute just one time? You know, it's not going to solve all the funding problems, but if everybody just contributed one time, say $5, then maybe the Horn could start next week, start year five, you know, with maybe a little running start instead of, you know, a foot in the bucket. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because that bucket gets awful uncomfortable.
Right. And like I said, the Horn had a near-death experience, people. Today was going to be best day for the Horn, and there would have been no birthday Saturday. We avoided that, but the wolf is at the door, at the Horn's door every month.
Yeah, well, the wolf lives here.
Right. The wolf lives there, and he just stands outside the door. And today being a prayer meeting night and all, you know, I know how uncomfortable...
Deacon Michael, I do believe you are passing the plate.
Well, maybe I am, but I just want to make it clear. You know, Bob's uncomfortable asking for contributions, and sometimes, you know, Kate or others step in and do it on your behalf. It's not so Bob can get the gold-plated rims on the Cadillac Escalade limo. You know, just as, some of these, you know... Electric Jesus preachers might.
We're a long way from the Learjet yet.
You and Guy are going to Washington in what, 2 weeks?
A week from today I'll be leaving.
Okay, a week from today. And as far as I know, you're not taking the Horn corporate jet, right?
No, it's in the shop.
You
said you had a Hemi. I do. It's in the shop. Yeah, it's in the shop. It's getting its the gyros reflagellated. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I'll get out of the way, you know, so you can.
Guy's flying coach. And, you know, he'll be grateful and lucky if he gets the bag of stale peanuts. And, you know, I'm driving.
Right. Well, you know, I'll get out of the way here, but I just want to say one more time, please, everybody, you know, like I said, if you already contributed or you're a regular contributor, just add an extra $5 this month. And earmark it for the birthday, you know, if you send it in the mail or submit it to PayPal, just, you know, earmark it, you know, with happy birthday or whatever. But, you know, this is more to the people who haven't contributed, not because I'm resentful, but because I just know there's so many people out there listening that don't versus that do. So it's just, if everybody just gave an extra $5, just help the Horn kick off year five by just kicking in your own $5. Because I know there's a lot of people, I know some people are tapped out, but I know there's a lot of people listening who aren't tapped out. And what better reason, you know, if you're just going to give the Horn, just contribute once this year, why not now for the birthday? Just $5. If you can do more, great, but you know, if everybody really did it, then, well, okay, I'll shut up now.
No, you don't have to. I gotta be honest. This is a little bit mercenary on my part. But it's a lot more comfortable to hear someone who actually values the programming say it than it is for me. Because there's a level of affirmation that takes place, and a level of, you know, a level of reality that takes place when you say it, Michael, and when others say it, as opposed to when I'm just sitting here trying to make the circumstances real for folks who share their time. And, you know, that's the other thing. It is a sharing of time. And the time shared with us at the Horn is cherished and it's valuable. And that's why we continue to do what we do. But we can't have this dialogue. We can't have this discussion. We can't, none of this, this 4 years of reality and about to start on year five, can't happen unless we get, you know, I know you're supposed to crawl before you walk and you have to walk before you run. But it's a matter of crawling with a knee. It's crawling with our knees in buckets, walking with our knees in buckets, and we ain't even thinking about running. We're still toddling. Because, you know, I guess that's toddler age. But I appreciate it, Michael. I genuinely do. And for everybody who does contribute and does make sure that we get from, you know, August to September, September to October, and hopefully October to November. You know, it looks like we will. The expression of gratitude and of affection and of genuine appreciation cannot be thoroughly enough expressed. But I also understand your exhortation of folks who never have and, you know, might be able to. And so, Michael,
yeah, I mean,
thank
I'm
you
not
very
mad
much.
At them. I just,
No.
It's just, there's so, it just seems to me like it's the birthday, what better time? It's so easy to do for, I would think, most people. Like I said, I know there are exceptions, but I would think most people, especially if you never have, so easy to do. Just one time this year, put in $5. It's so easy to do. There's so many who don't. I'm just thinking about it pragmatically. It's like, I'm not mad at anybody.
No.
By all means, keep listening, you know, please.
Exactly. Well, Michael, I really appreciate it, and thank you very much.
All right, Bob. I'll get out of the way here. Have a good evening.
All right, you take care. Bye now.
Bye.
Kid A from the chat room. That's how you know him if you go there. That is Michael calling from Ohio. And I suppose at 9 minutes before the hour, we are pretty close to done with the day's program. Awfully good to have Guy James back earlier in the day, these 2 days. It's so important to have him in the process as well. I'm just grateful that he's able to be behind the microphone again. And a little bit of honoring, a little bit of credit where credit is due. Something happened yesterday in the Senate Judiciary Committee. They held a hearing titled Medical Debt: Can Bankruptcy Reform Facilitate a Fresh Start? And if you, like some that I heard from, saw it, you saw, on the one hand, inspiring stories. You heard horror stories, horrible story, a family destroyed by medical debt as they watched their son die of cystic fibrosis, among other things. Elizabeth Edwards, who had recently had chemotherapy, appeared to speak, and among other things, that most loathsome of members of the United States Senate, Senator Jefferson Beauregard Sessions III, said, well, it's only fair if people got some money to make sure that they pay the corporations back, ain't it? Yeah. Good luck with that, Senator Sessions. But there was a stirring moment when Senator, and I like saying this, Senator Al Franken questioned a senior fellow from the Hudson Institute by the name of Diana Furchtgott-Roth. Where do they find these people? Diana Furchtgott-Roth about medical bankruptcy. Furchtgott-Roth, really, I'm not playing, F-U-R-C-H-T-G-O-T-T. Furchtgott-Roth sat there with a straight face and said that moving toward a European-style universal health care system would increase bankruptcies. And Franken questioned her about the number of medical bankruptcies in countries that have universal health care, such as Switzerland and France. Her response?
Well, I don't have that number. I'm sorry, I don't have that number. That number evades me. I don't have it available to me.
Well, let's hear Senator Franken, because I like saying Senator Franken.
Dr. Furchtgott-Roth.
See, he has trouble with it, too.
I disagree on whether the health care reform that we're talking about now in Congress should pass. And he said that kind of the way we're going will increase bankruptcies. I want to ask you, how many bankruptcies because of medical crises were there last year in Switzerland?
I don't have that number in front of me, but I could find out.
I can tell you how many it was.
Get back to you.
It's zero. Do you know how many medical bankruptcies there were last year in France?
I don't have that number, but I can get back to you if you like.
Yeah, the number is zero. Do you know how many were in Germany?
From the trend of your questions, I'm assuming the answer is zero, but I don't know the precise amount, and I would have to get back to you.
Well, you're very good. You're very fast. The point is that I think we need to go in that direction, not in the opposite direction. Thank you.
Do you know the cancer survival rates in those countries?
You know, you've picked on one, and if you look at that study, did you know that we pick easily, much more easily survivable cancer rates? So if you want to start getting into digging deep into studies, that study isn't legitimate. I've heard that before. That's because we find easily survivable cancers to count as ones that we survive. So if you want to, you know, you can cherry pick stuff to find one little place where somebody says our system works better than the French or the Germans. But we're talking about bankruptcy here today. And the fact of the matter is, you're saying that if we go more to a French system or a Swiss system, that we'll have increased bankruptcies. But the fact is, they don't have bankruptcies, and we do for medical care. Thank you.
Zap! That's for everybody who wants a little lightning bolt now and then. Everything Senator Franken said was true, but I introduced this by saying, let's give credit where credit is due. That hearing in which he humiliated Hudson Institute senior fellow Diana Furchtgott-Roth, that took place yesterday. However, if you were listening to this program a month or two ago, you heard that man who is right before and correct before most members of Congress ever think about being it make precisely that point in peeling like a grape another member, I think, of the Hudson Institute. And that man was Dennis Kucinich. It was Dennis Kucinich who first pointed out that there are no medical bankruptcies in countries with universal single-payer health care. Bravo to you, Congressman Kucinich. Bravo. Bravo to you all. for helping the horn get past this drop-dead day. For it was. It was not a joke. But thanks to you, we're still here. We're still standing. And you did that. Thank you. Thanks to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and CoalRiverWind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
Talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hey there. Yes, indeed, you are listening to the Guy James Show, the one and only Guy James, coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida, Naples, Fort Myers area. Welcome to the show. So good to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We do appreciate your listenership. Indeed, we do. Ah, yes, what a day. What a day it is. A beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. We probably get a little rain in a while, but around 80 degrees, 81 or so. We had terribly hot weather for a while, and it's a pleasure to have some cooler weather now. Let me see. I've got all the dials and buttons and switches here working right. I think I do. Let me know if they're not. That's one nice thing about having a interactive audience. They can let you know in a moment's notice, hey, things aren't going right. Hey, I want to apologize for yesterday. Well, I don't know if I want to apologize. I got a ton of email yesterday, and it seemed kind of odd to me that just practically everybody that listened, except for a couple of righties that I regularly hear from, agreed with everything we had to say yesterday. And let me tell you a little bit about yesterday. Yesterday was one of those days where I woke up in the morning and honestly, and I'm not the sickly type, honestly, I thought I had the flu.
it's really hitting hard here. You know, all those northerners are coming down here and bringing it with them. And I actually thought I had it. I had, you know, the sniffles and a headache and just felt terrible. So I actually took a nap in the morning and show prep wasn't what it ought to be. And I decided that, well, we're going to do a show. We told everybody we're going to do a show. We can't not do a show. So we went on yesterday anyway, and what you heard was pretty much an hour and 45 minutes of preaching from yours truly from whatever came to mind. And a lot did come to mind, and I bared my soul on a lot of things, I know. But anyway, I want to thank everybody that sent email. Those of you that said you agreed with everything I said, I usually don't get email like that. A lot of people, you know, a lot of times they'll write and say, hey, you dumb, I didn't like what you said about this or that. Well, I didn't hear that yesterday. So it must have been all right after all. A lot going on in the news, of course. We have the healthcare battle raging along, as it has been doing for quite some time now. I did want to mention we have Sarah Palin, you know, and one of my favorite subjects. She really is. Her book has come out, I guess, number one. Before it's number one on the bestseller list before it even came out. Called Going Rogue, An American Life. Sarah Palin, like anybody, well, I guess somebody would care, but. It's fascinating to me that this book hasn't come out yet. I think it has a it's got a $34.95. No, that's not true. $28.95. Yeah, $28.95 price on it. And it's at the top of the bestseller list. Hasn't been released yet, but there have been so many orders, they say. They, you know, though. I could get a T-shirt that says they on it. But she's at the top. I went past the Ted Kennedy book and, wait a minute, ranked number two on Amazon because of the number of pre-orders. And some bloggers doubted the bestseller status of the book, and they said it would be strange because bookstores aren't reporting any special interest in the book, believe it or not, even in her home state of Alaska. And it was suspected that conservative groups, well, I always suspect conservative groups. When any right-winger brings a book out, the conservative book groups come a-running, and they buy the books by the thousands, by the tens of thousands. You did know that, most of you. All of my listeners know that. We keep you informed, and you make yourselves informed. It's not that I bring everything to your attention. You already know a lot of this. But anyway, it is suspected that conservative groups were trying to make the book look like a bestseller by pre-ordering huge quantities of it that they would later sell cheaply or give away, as they always do. Mark Levin's book, who else? Well, any right-winger that brings out a book, it sells immense numbers, Glenn Beck right now. And, of course, this wouldn't be the first book by a right-winger that was propped up in this way by some sort of organizational buying, and it makes it look like the public is excited by these right-wing authors. And it's also a nice backhanded way to funnel money to the supposed authors. And in that case, she is the supposed author. Getting money to them. Well, it's beginning to look like the people that doubted this were right, and I doubted it all along, and the giveaway has already started. The right-wing magazine, Town Hall, evidently ordered a few thousand copies, and they're offering to give a free copy of Palin's book to anyone who will pay $34.95 to subscribe to their slanted little magazine. And they aren't alone. Newsmax has jumped into the fray also. These right-wing nut jobs offer two different options now. Pay attention for getting the book. Option one, they'll sell you the book for just $8.95 plus shipping and handling. Huh? It's a book that was selling for mid-$20 and it's down to $8.95 already. And they'll throw in a free four-month subscription to their magazine, Newsmax. Huh? Such a deal. And then they've got a second option that costs a little bit more. But the Palin book is free, you see. That's right. It's a freebie. Just like going to McDonald's and getting a Happy Meal, you got a little toy in there. Subscribe to their magazine for $49.95, and they'll send you the book as a booby prize. Booby prize. So, the long and the short of it is, I seriously doubt that these are the only two right-wing organizations that have been bulk buying the Palin book. If anybody really wants Palin's books, all they have to do is wait a while, and pretty soon these books will be cheaper than the local small-town newspaper here. These organizations try and dump these books any way they can once they get a hold of a bunch of them, and I don't think they'll be a huge reason to go out and make a second printing of them, do you think? No, I don't think so. And I was reading a fascinating story today. I don't know how many of you it will actually interest. I think maybe a lot of you. Fascinating to me because it's somewhat of a local story. You all remember Tom Moynihan of Domino's Pizza fame. He started the Domino's Pizza franchise and became a billionaire. And he's got a great big farm up outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan. I've been there. Yes, unfortunately, I have been to Ann Arbor, Michigan. But we won't go into football right now. It's kind of a sore subject with us Buckeye fans. Next year. Anyway, I'm trying to keep my chin up after I was getting beaten by the likes of Purdue last weekend. Congratulations to the Boilermakers. It's just a game, huh? Oh, no. Poor Buckeye. Anyway, Tom Moynihan, he's filthy rich, and he bought the Detroit Tigers, and I was actually at the car auction in, over in western Indiana. I can't think of the name of it all of a sudden. Where, anyway, I was there the day he paid the record price for a vintage automobile, and I think it is still the record for an automobile. He bought I think it was a 1935 Bugatti Royale for $8 million, and there was a lot of excitement in there. He had quite a collection of cars. But anyway, he got rid of the Tigers, he got rid of Domino's, and he got into religion. He's a Catholic, you know. And he says he founded a law school up in Ann Arbor someplace, and he had a little law school, and he funded some other small Catholic school. I forget the name of it. But then he decided that wasn't good enough. He was going to build a university, and he was going to have it someplace where the state would agree not to interfere with him whatsoever, that he could actually have his own little fiefdom, and laws wouldn't apply that applied to, you know, to the campus, that applied to every place else in the state. And naturally, a la Walt Disney, he got that done, and he got it done just down the road from where we are here, not very far. At a place, a little place called Immokalee, and it's south of there. They've got a big Indian casino in Immokalee, but it's just south of there. And he decided to name this Catholic university Ave Maria. And he had plans for this huge cathedral and all that, and he scaled them back. Anyway, he put a couple hundred million dollars behind it, and he got his good buddy Anton Scalia involved and Robert Bork involved, and they were going to put in the world's premier law school. And it's really out in the middle of the swamp. And what he did, he got the Baron Collier family down here in Naples and Collier County, Florida, got them to donate 750 acres for this thing. And then they were going to split the profits of building a city and stores and all that. It was going to be a self-contained unit there. So they go about this, and they build it. It took a long time. It took them longer than they thought. And they finally have this Ave Maria University open down here and out in the middle of the swamp, and plans for the town aren't going so very well, and there was a big dust up about the drugstore they put there, refusing to sell contraceptives of any kind because of the Catholic rules that Moynihan had put in place. And it's been in the news quite a bit, but now we're finding that the law school, he promised to build a $30 million law building. And it seems that Moynihan's foundation that he put up to fund this Ave Maria University has gone broke. And now the plans for the $30 million law building have been shelved, and they started the law classes recently in an old folks home. Yeah, they bought an old folks home, and, true, and put in this law school. And anyway, they, are we, oh, okay. I had somebody say they thought the stream was gone. We're okay. The stream is fine, actually. So Moynihan's law school isn't doing so well, and it turns out that the graduates from where they had it last year were among the bottom of all law schools in the United States, so it didn't hasn't fared too well so far. But he's a big-time Republican, is the reason I brought that up. He's friends with Robert Bork and Anton Scalia. He flew Scalia to his farm in Ann Arbor, and they talked this whole thing over and had a meeting with Bork, and Bork agreed to be on the faculty of it, but he's not on the faculty of it now because it's somewhat disgraced since it's in an old folks' home. Why did I bring that up? I don't know. I just found it interesting. I've always found Tom Moynihan and his ventures to be very, very interesting, him buying the Detroit Tigers and selling them and then keeping his money and deciding. He said, I want to die broke. I want to give all my money to Catholic education. So that's a good thing. But some of his things aren't turning out so well, and some of the people that have worked for him have said that trouble is the reason he's failing with his Ave Maria University is he thinks he can run it like a pizza parlor, and it doesn't quite work out that way. I did want to ask all of you, oh, and by the way, somebody asked me yesterday, and I'd be remiss if I didn't pass this along to you. We did speak yesterday of the confusion and just all the craziness that's gone on about the health care program. If you want a very good, cogent explanation of what is going on with the health care bill now and what they're going to do and what they're not going to do and all, go to whitehouse.gov, whitehouse.gov/reality check. And there you will find, I think, all you need to know about what is and is not going to be in this health care bill, what they want in it anyway. And it will dispel a lot of the rumors and myths that you've heard. And I don't know why the White House hasn't used this more than they have. I didn't find out about it until today. Whitehouse.gov/reality check. So you be sure and check that out. If you want to discuss the health care with your friends and neighbors, this would be a good place for you to go and bone up on all the details. It's all there, and it'll help you understand this. I know I had some questions about a few things that this helped clarify for me. I wanted to ask you, I was going to ask yesterday, and I got running off the head and talking about something else. Have you seen a lot of these bumper stickers popping up, Stop Socialism? Have you? They're all over the place here. Of course, this is a very conservative area. Tiger County is like 2-1 Republican, and it isn't quite so bad in Lee County here. They're adjoining counties, Lee County being north of Collier County, Collier County being where Naples is, and Lee County being where Fort Myers is. But Collier County is just about 2-1, and Lee County not quite that bad, but it's pretty doggone Republican anyway. Although Republicans seem to be dropping off the face of the earth. Have you noticed how many of your Republican friends who have been Republicans ever since you've known them, right? You know a lot of people like that. They've been Republicans ever since you can remember. All of a sudden, they're not Republicans anymore. They're conservatives or they're libertarians. I wonder if George Bush actually did that much damage to the party, or if they did that much damage to themselves over his tenure, that a lot of people just don't want to be associated, are they embarrassed to be associated with the Republican Party now? Is there going to be a big split, a so-called civil war within the ranks of the Republican Party? Will they split down the middle with the evangelicals and the hard right leaving, and the neocons, all them getting on one side and the more moderate Republicans getting on the other? I wonder. But it does seem odd to me that clear down around 20% now, only 20% of the people are identifying themselves as Republicans. So in that regard, you do have to wonder, after all the talk you've heard from the press in the past couple of months about President Obama's declining popularity and the Democrats' declining popularity, you do have to wonder now if that's true at all. I mean, I don't doubt that Obama's popularity has dropped, but it seems to me that the divide between those declaring themselves Republicans and those claiming to be Democrats has widened. So it could be that the Republicans, with all of this rhetoric that they put out, with all the nasty things they've done, with all the abominable practices, and all of this being a party of no, seems to me they may have damaged themselves. And it seems to me they may have be causing an irreparable split in their party. And I hope that happens. I do hope that happens. They've been flirting with this for a long time. And you know the crazies out there. You've got the Glenn Becks. And, of course, they don't even claim to be the Becks and the Limbaughs and those people. They don't claim to be Republicans anymore. They're conservatives. They don't want to be identified. It's just like a sporting game. They don't want to be identified with losers. And let's face it, as a party right now, and I'm not throwing any halos around the Democrats' head. I'm not crowning them anything special right now because, I mean, if you listen to yesterday's program, you know I'm pretty disgusted with them as well. But the Republicans, this deal of becoming the party of no, behaving like children having tantrums, you've seen that. The children get down on the floor and start kicking their heels and screaming, and you can't get them stopped. That's the way the Republicans have behaved ever since the inauguration. They have voted no on everything. And you and I both know that no matter how much they despise Barack Obama, and they do, and no matter how much he is despised by the real right-wingers, and they do hate him, not everything he is doing could be wrong. But according to the Republican Party, everything he's done is wrong, and they have voted no on every last thing that has come up. And that's fairly unreasonable. Adults don't act that way. Serious adults don't act that way. And we touched upon this yesterday about the intelligent quotient of people in high places. I can tell you that it is a myth. It is an absolute myth that our elected officials, the people in the House and the Senate, are these necessarily these brilliant people with, great brain power, just smarter than the rest of us, and therefore they know better than we do for everything. That is a myth. Especially if you sit and talk to some of them, you'll find out that many of them are just regular folks. I could list you a name of a group of them that I know that are, in fact, just regular folks with average intelligence. That's for sure. And like any other cross-section of America, there's some very intelligent people there, too. There's bound to be some. But don't go around with the myth that they would like to propagate, and they do propagate, that they're high and mighty and smarter than we are, and that's why they're running the country. Ain't necessarily so. Not at all. They're not smarter than everybody else. And they don't know how to run the country better than anybody else. And some of them better damn well learn how to run the country a little better here soon. Anyway, before I sidetrack myself here, and I don't know where I went wrong here, went off the path. These stickers on the cars. Stop socialism. They're lousy around here. They're everywhere. Stop socialism. Stop it now. I asked a guy and his wife that I know about their bumper sticker. I mean, I don't really know them. I know them to speak to them, say hi and all that. And I know their politics. But I saw them, they had the back of their car, they had great big, stop socialism. black with great big white letters and an asterisk at the end of it. Displaying that proudly on the back of their PT Cruiser. And they've been hardcore Republicans all their lives. And so I asked them what this Stop Socialism bumper sticker means. Where did you get that bumper sticker, and what does that mean to you? And he asked me, he answered with a question that I really did expect, but I didn't expect it to be as totally ridiculous as it was. I knew it would be stupid, but it was knowing these folks and knowing that they voted for Warren Sarah Palin as president, you know, do I have to say more? That says it all right there, doesn't it? If anyone seriously wants Sarah Palin as the president of the United States, you don't have to wonder or guess another thing about their IQ. That's a fact, isn't it? You know that. So anyway, I asked him what that bumper sticker meant to him, and he said, do you want to be forced to speak Russian? Or wear a hammer and sickle on your clothing? Or maybe even be forced to say Heil Obama if he has his way? Honestly, Scott's honor, that's the answer I got. How do you answer that? Do you answer that? Or do you just smile and turn around and walk away because you know that anything that you would say in response to that, first of all, they would not accept because it's coming from somebody other than Glenn Beck or Rush Limbaugh. But secondly, you know they could not accept anything that was intelligent at all. They couldn't process it. And anyone that wanted Sarah Palin as president, and everybody that gives you an answer like, we don't want to be forced to speak Russian and wear a hammer and sickle and be forced to say Heil Obama if he has his way. Anybody that thinks quite like that cannot process an intelligent answer. So I think the thing to do is probably just to politely say, okay, and smile, and turn around and walk away, and try and keep your guffaws to yourself as long as you can until you get away from their hearing. It goes along with what I was saying yesterday. I'm feeling a little more lighthearted about it today than I was yesterday. I was in that mood yesterday. I am disgusted about the IQ of the average American these days. Seems like it is going down. The dumbing down of America is a fact. There isn't any question about it. And I think a lot of it has to do with TV. A lot of it probably has to do with the Internet. A lot of it has to do with certain individuals and certain parties owning the media and having a monstrous advantage in the media like they do. I don't have to tell you that Rupert Murdoch is planning on expanding that gap as much as he possibly can, along with many others as well. And you hear from these people that are funded with millions and tens and hundreds of millions of dollars, the Heritage Foundation and all them. So this media onslaught from the right isn't going to stop anytime soon. And I hope you're not tired of hearing me preach about it, because I happen to believe that it is the number one thing wrong with political discourse in the United States today. It is the number one problem with causing the dumbing down of America. When you preach enough hatred and bigotry and racism and crazy, crazy neocon wild-ass ideas defending anything the military-industrial complex will do, and bashing the President of the United States, calling him Hitler, and the filthy things that they've done. You know, when you preach that 24/7 on tens and hundreds and thousands of media outlets across this country every single day, and there virtually is no rebuttal, and don't come back and tell me, well, you know, we got Ed Schultz and we got, you know, what's in it, Rachel and Keith. Okay, we got a little bit of a megaphone there, but not very much. and I'm sorry if I bore you with talking about this, but until that changes, and Bob and I have often talked about this, it sticks in our craw, as a lot of country folk would say. Until that's settled, until that divide is narrowed, until we level this playing field to where it's not upside down like it is right now, this will not stop. This dumbing down of America will continue, and it will get worse and worse and worse. And I'm not kidding. It will. So if you see anybody with those Stop Socialism bumper stickers, stop them and ask them, first of all, do they even know what socialism is? They might also want to find out that the hammer and sickle deal has kind of gone by the wayside now. And if anybody was going to force us to speak anything else, it wouldn't be the Russians. And I don't know, Heil Obama, that'd be kind of out of fashion, don't you think? I think it'd be more clever than that. So, I don't know. I thought about that one, and I did have some fun listening to that. I most certainly did. You know, we're going to talk about several things on the program today, and we'll end up talking about health care and all that. I got an email today from my friend Sputnik Weasel from London, and he's put out a new album of a cappella music. What's the one I like so much? I never can think of the name of it. New American Century. I think we played that yesterday. And Sputnik sent me some new music today for my perusal to let me know what I think about it. And I love his music. There's something haunting about it. There's always a good message in it. And it's a cappella. And as he likes to say, it's a cappella except for a little percussion here and there and playing anything he might be able to carry in his pocket. And so I think I'll play one of those for you, and we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Show here on the Head On Radio Network. Really glad to be with you today. See that we've got a good audience listening. And let's do open up the phones, 866-546-5254. Our producer will answer the phones and put you online. Our producer being being me. And we'll get you right on if we can. So do keep that in mind. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. And join us. We always love to hear what you have to say as well. I have a couple more tunes from Sputnik Weasel coming up a little later on in the program, just kind of trying those out to see. I do want to encourage everybody, all of our friends up in the Chicago area, you know, they're having what they call the showdown in Chicago coming up on the 25th of October, 25th, 26th, and 27th. My birthday, actually. I'm a Scorpio. And anyway, they're going to be having this showdown in Chicago, the same financial institutions that caused the economic crisis and took billions in taxpayer bailouts are back to earning incredible profits. Meanwhile, Americans face shrinking pensions, rising foreclosures and unemployment, state budget cuts, predatory lending, outrageous overdraft fees, and sky-high credit card interest rates. Well, the American people want some oversight, and they're having this big banking meeting in Chicago on those 3 days. And we're trying to get a bunch of people to go and let them know we're not going to take it anymore. That we are, in fact, mad as hell and not going to take it anymore from the banks. Huh? So show up for that. I hope it's going to be a big deal. I hope it's going to be a big deal. It's the 25th, 26th, and 27th in downtown Chicago. And the American people versus the Wall Street banks. It's called the Showdown in Chicago, and I hope a lot of people show up for that. And I know you've all heard, and I did get an email just a few minutes ago that says the U.S. to order steep pay cuts at firms that got the most aid, the banks that got the most aid, and this fury that's growing because of the huge paychecks, the billions of dollars in reserves that these people have put aside for bonuses to themselves, the fat cats and all that. The Obama administration is going to pare those back some, or force the banks to pare them back if they got bailout funds. Well, you know how that works. I think we gave you an example of it yesterday, that Geithner had talked somebody into foregoing his $1.9 million salary for the year. I forget which company it was. One of the big groups. Because at the end of the year, he was leaving with like a $65 or $85 million package. You know how that works. So the fact that the Obama administration is telling these people that they're going to have to pare back their bonuses, they will find a way to pay every dollar of those bonuses. You know they will, because you know if it comes down to a fight between the banks and the Obama administration, or any administration, you know who will win that fight. Do we not? Of course. So they will find a way to funnel all that money to those guys. One way or another, they will get it. Things are looking up on Wall Street. Things are looking very good on Wall Street. The Dow's up over 10,000. It was before the show anyway. I know oil went up to about 81 bucks a barrel today, so... And the dollar went to, I think something like a low, the lowest point since last year, because of the oil and because of the threats that a lot of people are going to devalue the dollar, and that's going to cause a lot of problems for the country. The Chinese, they hate to see the dollar devalued the way it is, so they're going to be more careful about lending money to us. It's going to cause some huge ramifications around the country. And yes, Johnny O says something that's absolutely right. If you go to Chicago, don't act like those frickin' teabaggers did when they were out and around. Be civil, dress well. You know how they always accuse us of being a bunch of hippies. Comb your hair, take a bath, wear nice clothes, and be peaceful, and have respectful signs. Don't behave like a teabagger. Good idea, Johnny. Oh, good thing. Thanks for mentioning that. But I'm talking about Wall Street there and how they're paying out these big bonuses and these big salaries, and everything's well now. The banks are healthy. Oh, gee, they're really healthy again, and things are going along so well. Not going along good for you and I, is it? whatever Wall Street's got to do, the Wall Street being up to 10,000, what's that got to do on Main Street? Foreclosures. The worst 3 months of all time. The same week the Dow goes to 10,000, foreclosures, the worst 3 months of all time. Despite signs of broader economic recovery, the number of foreclosure filings hit a record high in the third quarter. And that's a sign not only that things are not getting better, but it's a sign that things are getting worse. And we've heard all this news, and again, our media, our woeful media that we have, and I will agree with a lot of the right-wingers when they talk about the media and how inept it is. It is. Oh, it is. It is, for a fact, really bad. I mean, we were riveted for how much time? I wasn't, but last week, this phony baloney balloon deal. I mean, I know it's news, and I know it's interesting, a kid in a balloon, you know, they thought it was in the balloon, and he was, you know, 6-year-old and all that, and it was quite a story. But we had people die in Iraq and Afghanistan the same day. The media just goes, you know, the old story, if it bleeds, it leads. That's how it goes. Yeah, really, really and true, that is the story in the newsrooms. That is the saying, if it bleeds, it leads. But here we have Wall Street gone over 10,000, and the media making a big deal out of it, man, really beating those drums. Oh, hey, happy days are here again. Oh, yeah, things are great. The Dow's over 10,000. The sun is out. The flowers are blooming, and everything is right with America again. Well, not so fast. The same day that came out, that 10,000, is the same day this report came out. The worst 3 months of all time in foreclosures. Foreclosures are growing. There are predictions out now that real estate values will drop another 11% next year. How many more people is that going to turn upside down? Tremendous number. And there are many, many of these mortgages. All of a sudden, it escapes me. The ARMs, adjustable rate mortgages, many, many of those ready to recycle now and go to a much higher interest rate. And, of course, the credit card fees going higher and higher. So I don't want to be the purveyor of bad news. I don't want to be doom and gloom every day, but I do like to call it like I see it. And anybody who thinks that this crisis is over or getting better, I don't see any signs whatsoever of it getting better. None. We may have gasoline. In fact, we have gasoline heading back up right now. I know around here it's gone up about 20 cents in the last 3 weeks. The idea that this crisis is over or it's getting better is pure folly. It is not. We have millions of people unemployed. We have millions of people underemployed. We have millions of people who have lost everything they have. Millions of people who are losing their homes. It is not over. Not by a long shot is not over. So let's not all sit back and get comfy over all this, because we're still facing a crisis in this country. Absolutely. And the media can crow all they want to about Wall Street and 10,000, and that doesn't mean a damn thing to most people in this country. Doesn't mean squat. During the last 3 months, 937,840 homes foreclosures, almost a million. Default notices, auction notice, bank repossession. That means one out of every 136 U.S. homes were in foreclosure. Imagine that. That's a 5% increase from the second quarter and a 23% jump over the third quarter of 2008. You know, we talked about this last year, how bad it was in 2008, the last quarter. Oh, my God. And we find out that this third quarter is 23% worse than the third quarter of last year. No sign that things are getting better. Of course, Nevada continued to be the worst hit state. I find this number just flabbergasting. One filing for every 23 houses. Imagine that. One filing out of every 23 households. Vermont, they have jumped their number of foreclosures, but still, they've only got one filing for every 5,023 households in the state. That's the best rate in the country. But even theirs went up. So, I don't know where that's going to go. And the story I read today about properties going back down another 11%, being devalued another 11% is, that's serious bad news. And it's particularly bad news around here where property values, for the most part, have gone down 50%. I doubt you'd get anybody to disagree with that statement. Going to, hey, I do want to say one thing. You know, when the Norm Coleman, Al Franken thing was going on, I made a statement one day, and no one commented about it, and I'm glad. But I made a statement one day that I hoped Al Franken won, but I had my doubts as how good of a senator Al Franken would be. I take that back. And not just because of what I'm about to play, but I take it back from all I've kept track of about Al Franken since he's been sworn in as United States Senator. Al Franken is doing a great job. He's putting in his hours. He's getting the elbow grease going. Al Franken is a serious, serious senator and doing a wonderful job in the United States Senate. He was talking yesterday about health care with one of the hot shots from one of the big foundations, right-wing foundations in Washington, D.C., who came before the hearing to defend the health care folks. And Al, I'd say, well, listen for yourself.
Dr. Furk Roth, I think we disagree on whether health care reform the health care reform that we're talking about now in Congress should pass. And you said that kind of the way we're going will increase bankruptcies. I want to ask you how many bankruptcies because of medical crises were there last year in Switzerland?
I don't have that number in front of me, but I could find out.
I can tell you how many it was.
Get back to you.
It's zero. Do you know how many medical bankruptcies there were last year in France?
I don't have that number, but I can get back to you if you like.
Yeah, the number is zero. Do you know how many were in Germany?
From the trend of your questions, I'm assuming the answer is zero, but I don't know the precise amount, and I would have to get back to you.
Well, you're very good. You're very fast. The point is that I think we need to go in that direction, not in the opposite direction. Thank you.
Do you know the cancer survival rates in those countries?
You know, you've picked on one, and if you look at that study, did you know that we pick easily, much more easily survivable cancer rates? So if you want to start getting into digging deep in the studies, that study isn't legitimate. I've heard that before. That's because we find easily survivable cancers to count as ones that we survive. So if you want to, you know, you can cherry pick stuff to find one little place where somebody says our system works better than the French or the Germans. But we're talking about bankruptcy here today. And the fact of the matter is, you're saying that if we go more to a French system or a Swiss system, then we'll have increased bankruptcies. But the fact is, they don't have bankruptcies, and we do for medical care. Thank you. You think about it, you know why you watch them, all the movies with the peasants in them. You know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about peasants. Not pheasants, peasants. You know you're a peasant when you absolutely worship the very people who are right now, this very minute, conning you and taking your stuff. There is that attitude. There is that mentality. Whatever the master does, you're on board. And when you get upset and you open your mouth, he sticks a great big cross in the middle of your village and you spend the rest of your life praying to it with big googly eyes. Yes, master. Or he puts out newspapers full of innuendo about this or that faraway group and you immediately salute and rush off to join the hate squad. Boy, am I talking about rank and file Republicans here or not. I mean, a good peasant is loyal, he's simple-minded, check, and full of misdirected anger, check. And that's what we've got now. We've got a lot of misdirected anger, and it's searching around for a non-target to mispunish. Think about some of the people you know and the defense they put up over some of these companies I'm talking about. Oh, you can't be mad at AIG. You can't be mad at Citi or Goldman Sachs. The real villains have to be the anti-AIG protesters. After all, those people earned those bonuses. If ever there was a textbook case of peasant thinking, it's struggling middle-class Americans burned up in defense of taxpayer-funded bonuses to millionaires. It's crazy stuff, and it's bound to get crazier, and it will, as this crisis gets worse and more complicated. I have to think there's a day of reckoning coming. I hope there is, but I don't hold out a lot of hope, but I would hope that the day people come to realize how much money has been stolen from them, and we gave you some examples of that yesterday, and be assured that day of reckoning is coming. And when it comes, history's going to look back on this cartel of bankers right now the same way that the modern world looks back at Nazi Germany. And I'm not comparing one to the other. I'm just saying that they're going to look back the same way they look at the Nazis now. Their greed has inflicted immense human suffering the world over. And their greed has brought humanity to an absolute breaking point, and there are still people out there who defend them. I know a guy. I know a guy who is a small businessman. Let me, and I'm not going to mention his name because it would give it away, and I'm not even going to say what kind of a business because it would give it away to some of the locals here listening. But I know a guy that is in as hard a defense of these people, these bankers and these right-wingers, anything that Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck and all of them say is absolutely right,
and anything that George Bush did was absolutely right, and anything these bankers do is capitalism, man. It's capitalism. Let capitalism be free. Let the free market roam and do what it'll do. He'll give you that speech every day. He's filing for bankruptcy right now. He filed for bankruptcy a month ago. Because his business has gone completely to hell. Because people don't have money to spend on the products he sells anymore. But to this day, he will stand and defend the bankers and this run-amok capitalism banking that we've had over the last couple of years. You talk about a peasant mentality, man. There is the poster boy for it. And I'm sorry, if he's listening, he'll know exactly who I'm talking about. And some other people that know him will know exactly who I'm talking about. But it's disgusting for me to get in a conversation with somebody like that. And he said, well, you're anti-capitalist. You're a socialist. You're this, you're that. And you know, I'll defend the right to for people to make millions of dollars as CEOs. They've earned it. They should get it. And the bonuses, it's okay with me. Truly, this man has said all this to me and more. What do you say? It's what I mean about the dumbing down of America. The guy can read. He reads Limbaugh and Hannity and Beck books all day long. I know several cases like that. Stop the socialism. Obama's ruining the country. Never mind about those bankers on Wall Street. We need them. They're good for the country. They've done something good. I know they've done something good. Not sure what it is right now, but there's something. Uh-huh. Hey, listen to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to pause for news coming up at the top of the hour. And we'll be back afterwards with more. And we'll take your phone calls then as well. You're listening to the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network. It's the best there is, man.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. FedEx could be facing litigation from three states for alleged labor violations. Jesse Russell reports.
The attorneys general of Montana, New Jersey, and New York are planning a joint lawsuit against package delivery corporation FedEx for alleged labor law violations. At issue is the company's hiring of drivers and classifying them as independent contractors instead of employees. By calling the drivers independent contractors, FedEx avoids providing workers' compensation, and the employees are not covered under state labor laws. In a statement, New York Attorney General Andrew Cuomo said the misclassification denies the drivers employment rights they are guaranteed by law. The company has until October 27th to justify why a lawsuit should not be filed. In 2007, the Internal Revenue Service declared that FedEx ground workers are in fact employees. The company was hit with a $319 million fine that year. Earlier this year, attorneys general in New Jersey and seven other states sent a letter to FedEx warning the company they were concerned about the classification practices. More than 45 class action lawsuits have been filed in state and federal courts regarding this issue.
Labor Day, a new documentary film about SEIU's role in the 2008 presidential campaign, focuses on workers' efforts to elect Barack Obama. Filmmaker Glenn Silver.
There was something happening in the country that I want to capture, and I found it what I thought was a great, inspiring story in the role of these regular working folks working with their union to go out and try to mobilize themselves and make sure we won the swing states this time to take back their government.
Silver features SEIU workers in the film campaigning for change they could believe in while struggling with job loss, home foreclosures, and loss of health care.
These are profound issues that are going on all over the country, and we don't really see them in that kind of up-close and personal way as often as maybe we should be seeing them. They're still there. They're still waiting. They still want to see that change. I think it's time for everyone to join together now and unify and help speak out so that, you know, our leaders get the message.
Glenn Silver's Labor Day has its world premiere in Madison, Wisconsin, October 28th.
Here's today's economic report. According to the Centers for Disease Control, the H1N1 virus is most likely to send those under 25 to the hospital. The new study found that 53% of hospitalization cases were for people 24 or younger, 39% for people between 25 and 64, and only 7% for those over 65. The percentage of deaths among those who are 24 or younger was 24%, and 12% for those over 65.
Workers Independent News puts workers and their unions on the national radio news airwaves every day. To help keep labor's voice on the air, go to laborradio.org.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Show is on in less than 1 minute.
So this was fun.
You're getting an idea.
Let go! Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with. Yeah, this is good. I'm gonna get progress.
I have questions before we proceed.
Good countdown. Six. Five, four, three, two, one.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show.
The world is getting older. There's a few things to be said. Do you believe the things they told you? Do you believe the things you read?
The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Welcome back, everybody. I hope you took the opportunity to do what you have to do during the news. Maybe listen to the news and get yourself a cold drink. People on the chat room, I tell you, They have no feelings sometimes. They have no sense of sensitivities towards those of us sitting in a chair in a studio. We had Sophie talking about ice cream sundaes. And then Johnny O brought up key lime pie. And somebody asked what key lime pie was. Oh, I'll tell you what, I make a mean key lime pie cheesecake. I do. I love key lime pie. And I love key lime cheesecake. If you never had it, you need to try it. Oh, key lime ice cream. Oh, that sounds good. Yes, it does. Somebody asked, how are things going down here in Southwest Florida? Not well. We've got 14.8% unemployment in Lee County, Florida. Yes, 14.8. We have 80-year-old people rounding up grocery carts at the public supermarkets. Thank God they can even get those jobs. Kids out of high school finding no jobs. And, of course, that's the same all over the country. If you're in high school, you can't find a job. Any recent college grad, you can't find a job. It's that way all over, and it's not getting any better in the foreseeable future. We've got 10,000 on the Dow, and we've got a jobless recovery, as they say. People on Wall Street are recovering. I would like to remind you, I dug up some quotes, and I'm not going to bore you with a bunch of them, but I dug up some quotes. You know, we've got the confirmation of Ben Bernanke going on again here, And I don't think there's anybody more important to the government right now. And I know a lot of people think that Bernanke is doing a good job. Well, I don't know how to put this, but I wouldn't hire the guy that robbed a bank. You know, if I owned a bank and some guy robbed it, and he came in looking for a job, I don't think I'd hire him. And that's kind of the way I see this with Ben Bernanke. Let me give you a couple of quotes from Ben Bernanke. 2 years ago last week, okay? 2 years ago last week, Ben Bernanke said the banking system is healthy. Now, there were all kinds of signs to people on Wall Street that it was not healthy. They knew that they were leveraged to the brink of catastrophic losses. They knew that. They knew that. 2 years ago, Bernanke said that. And 2 years ago last week, Bernanke said this, and this one really grabs me. It is not the responsibility of the Federal Reserve, nor would it be appropriate to protect lenders and investors from the consequences of their financial decisions. Ben Bernanke. This is a guy that you want as the head of the Fed. Let me repeat that. It is not the responsibility of the Federal Reserve, nor would it be appropriate to protect lenders and investors from the consequences of their financial decisions. Ben Bernanke, 2 years ago last week. Wow. And they're thinking about putting him back in there again. I think there ought to be some sort of a 5-year moratorium that you can't go from Wall Street to a federal job. I do not like the fact that these guys are coming in straight out of Goldman Sachs and all that and feeding their brethren billions of dollars. I don't like it. It smells. It does absolutely smell. There's so many things that they look past. You know, the Glass-Steagall Act. And as I remembered, it was to ensure that only depository institutions benefited from explicit government guarantees. And progressive and transparent capital requirements, such as leverage ratio increasing with the total asset size. And it had mandatory levels of convertible debt, which would convert into equity as the bank's equity price is falling. And we ought to be having derivatives reform. No one's talking about derivatives reform. Hell, half of the people in politics don't even know what derivatives are. Three-quarters of the nation doesn't know what derivatives are. And there's been no talk of reform of them, including some sort of a mandatory clearinghouse for them. And I do think there ought to be a 5-year cooling off period before, you know, when you leave Wall Street before you can take a federal job. But I believe that they ought to take the big financial institutions and split banks and investment houses again, split them up, and give the SEC the regulatory power to oversee derivatives and see that they use it this time around instead of completely ignoring it. And as for any sort of compensation reform, I think these companies should pay what the market will allow. However, I would like to see a tax on a corporate payroll, and you can call it what you want, call it a stupid money tax, if you will. If they're going to throw idiot amounts of money at executives, put a monster tax on it. Put a huge tax on executive compensation that exceeds a certain multiple of non-managerial employee compensation, something like, you know, if it goes over 100 to 1, a lot of these people getting 500 to 1. It's crazy. But they ought to limit bank sizes, and it should be done because of concerns for competition and consumer choice. And this gets back to actual banks, not investment houses like Lehman and Bear Stearns. Best thing they could do would be to reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act and ban all taxpayer bailouts and Fed bailouts of any investment banks and derivatives and CDs, etc. These people ought to fund their own bailouts. And then they ought to mandate capital requirements for all these people. They ought to have capital requirements, and they ought to lower these leverage numbers instead of 30 to 1, take it back down to a reasonable level like 7, 8, 9, 10 to 1, but now it's like 30 to 1. Crazy what they do. Absolutely crazy. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to join us here on the program, we'd love to hear from you. 866-546-5254. Love that quote Harry Reid made yesterday. We're leaning toward talking about a public option. Leaning toward talking about a public option. And speaking about health care, I did want to thank Texas Betsy for sending this along. The parents of a two-year-old girl in Colorado are unable to attain health insurance for their daughter because the insurer, United Healthcare Golden Rule, claims she is too small. In a letter sent to the family of the child, Aislinn Bates, United Healthcare Golden Rule writes, "We are unable to provide coverage for Aislinn because her height and weight do not meet our company standards." Makes you wonder what United Healthcare's golden rule is. Something or other about doing to others? No. I don't think that's it, do you? God. No conscience. No conscience at all. 866-546-5254. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back in a minute.
Don't worry about the time that you've lost. Cause we all done wrong. Yeah, we all done wrong.
Spidey Weasel's done and grown. I like his work. Let me know if you do. I'd like to hear from you. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. David Vitter making the news, or rather trying not to make the news. I found it reprehensible, and so did many people across the country. This controversy surrounding Louisiana's Keith Bardwell generated national attention, and with good reason. He's a justice of the peace. Bardwell refuses to perform marriage ceremonies for interracial couples. I'm not a racist, he argues, as a defense. I just don't believe in mixing the races that way. As soon as the story went national, Senator Mary Landrieu condemned Bardwell's practices and called on him to resign, and Governor Bobby Jindal did the same thing. It was a no-brainer. But then there was that other statewide Louisianan whose silence has been conspicuous. As of Monday, David Vitter, a far-right Republican, has issued no statement. And actually, he has refused to make a statement. Odd, don't you think? I'm not sure, but what, we have somebody on the line here. Oh, we missed a call. If you called, call us back. Let's see if we have a call here. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Well, good afternoon, Guy.
Good afternoon.
This would be David from Maine.
Hi, David. How are things up in your territory?
Things are doing all right. Getting around winter time around here, or fall time rather. Sometimes you can't tell the difference.
You had any snow yet?
No snow yet. We almost got it. I was just listening to you talk about the disappointments of America since you've been back on the air. And yeah, there is a lot of disappointment, but you know, I always look at it in contrast to other countries, and I can say this for sure, certain, Guy, at least we're not the Congo.
Yeah.
Yet.
That's right. we're ahead of the Congo and Somalia.
Yeah, there you go. We're ahead of Congo and the Somalia. I was thinking about, I don't know if you caught what I was saying to Bob last night, but we got into a discussion about Jody Evans at Code Pink meeting Obama at a fundraiser. I don't know if you heard the story or not.
No.
Well, it wouldn't be covered on the news, and we know why. Don't we? Apparently, someone paid $30,000 for Code Pink to go to an Obama fundraiser. Jody decided to approach Obama and ask him some very poignant questions, and it was very revealing what Obama had to say. And she asked why, and this gives you a little glimpse into why so many people have no clue about the issues that they're talking about, need to start opening their books. And she asked him, she said, why do the women not have a role in the political process in Afghanistan? And Obama looked at her and said, well, what do you mean? I have Hillary Clinton on my team. And she said, and this is the zinger guy. She said, no, I'm talking about the Afghani women. And Obama's answer was crickets and then, oh.
Yeah, I would, if I were the president and just gave that answer to that question, I would be thinking, oh, hell, how can I get out of the room?
But, you know, that's where we have to, you know, as citizens of this country, not political affiliations, but we should give people a opportunity that, guess what, it's time for research and homework. I don't care if you're the president. Now it's time to know about some of these issues. It's time to listen to people like Andrew Bacevich and Jeremy Scahill, and listen to them in abundance and get rid of some of the hawks that you're listening to, because, you know. Oh, and the closing line. Oh, I forgot to tell you the closing line. He said, listen, we're not getting out of Afghanistan anytime soon.
Oh, that's good news. Not that we didn't expect that.
I know, we expect it, but this is the problem. I mean, the fact that we hear that at a private fundraiser, and he's that blunt to this woman. I was surprised that they didn't drag her out. She had her Code Pink shirt on and everything, with her Afghanistan protest slogans. For some reason, they were sleeping on the job on that one, and they let her through the door. And I guess Obama had no idea. This kind of tells you something, though. He had no idea that this woman was from Code Pink. I don't think he probably. I'm guessing he may not be that aware of how Code Pink gets down, so to speak.
Wow. And it's hard to believe anybody inside the Beltway wouldn't know about Code Pink.
Well, you know, I think the thing was, is it was so bold, the fact that they paid $30,000. They thought that they were probably, you know, paupers and they couldn't afford the tickets. Well, somebody ponied up the money and away they went inside this fundraiser that they weren't supposed to be.
Good for them.
Funny that the media never covered it, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, my.
Yeah. So, you know, when we look at a situation like Afghanistan and when we look at all the problems in this country that we face, it all ties together. And the fact that we can't discuss it openly should tell us something of a great deal. And I'll tell you something else, Guy. Since you were gone, I'm sure you were aware of the Balloon Boy saga. But you know what's interesting? What's interesting about this story is not the story itself, is the fact that two hoaxes back to back are what made the news. The Yes Men, they literally got behind a story that they were thought was so outlandish, and then it turned out to be a hoax. And then the Balloon Boy, the same thing. That's what it takes to get into the media now. Hoaxes.
All right. Yeah, you're exactly right. You get a good hoax going, and you can get right on there. And well, they got, what, 2 hours coverage out of that story, at least?
And it makes you wonder, should we be hoaxing the media, too? Because, I'll tell you what, the media is hoaxing us anyways, aren't they?
Yeah. Every day. Every single day. I'm disgusted with the media.
Before I go, I just wanted to say I've started fundraising money exclusively for the horn. So,
oh, good, thank you.
And I want to give people the opportunity. I don't know. Here's my idea. I want to make some sellers out of people on eBay, and it's really simple. I want people to find a niche in their area of where they can target a demographic and be able to make at least 50 to 100 a week for the horn. And I'm giving them my Gmail, which is hornauction@gmail.com. And if people need any help and you've always wondered how to get started in this, I guess I'm the kind of person to ask. I'm an intermediate type seller. I'm not a power seller, but I do have my power seller badge, and I am a top rated seller. But I do know something about how to get into a market and how to start your. And I'll tell you what, Guy. We could literally fund the horn in a snap if I had at least 10 to 20 people following me, and all we would require is 50 to 100. You guys keep the rest of the profits. Whatever it is you sell. And if you need help in it, here's the thing to think about, Guy. is the fact that the money, well, let's be realistic and honest. The money that people have right now, it's good that you're contributing, but eventually that is going to run out. So what you need to focus on is investing, and we need to open this door, guy. It needs to be opened, and that's why I'm kicking the door down. We need to start fundraising. So I've started fundraising. I pledged myself, I think, my goal is to do at least 50 to 100 just like everyone else every week. Hmm. And that's what I'm doing. And I just started contributing. I've picked out some items that I've locked on that are going to be in particular for the horn to raise funds. And I want people to take my lead and see what I'm doing. And if you have any questions, again, reach me at hornauction@gmail.com. And I want people to understand that you can do this. I can show you how. I can show you how to avoid the pitfalls. And I know how much time you can put into it, and I know exactly how you can brand yourself and just get out there on the marketplace where you'll be surprised how much you could be fundraising.
All right. I hope people will get in touch with you already.
Well, I've already had some people contact me, guy. I'm looking for my main goal for October, and here's the thing that I want people to understand. I know you probably heard me on Bob's show say this, but the reason why I'm doing this is strategic, because we're about to hit the Christmas rush point. The Christmas rush point, we could raise a lot of money, people. And when I mean a lot of money, I don't have a number on it, because that's how good it could be.
Hmm.
All you have to do is sell something that is a low-cost type of item. Be very measured with your integrity, and have the proper seller's etiquette. And you, too, can be a fundraiser. And it's not that hard, guy, and this is why I'm telling people, I'm challenging them. I want at least 10. I would be so thrilled with 20 people following me. I don't even require that. You're not going to take that many hours with the way I think we can set this up. Again, 50 to 100, it's easy. The first 4 weeks are going to be, you know, a trial for you. To get a sale, but once that starts rolling, you're going to be surprised. And the reason why I'm doing this, guy, is because when hard times come across for the horn, we'll have that reserve built up in the back, and you guys can kick back a little on two legs of the chair instead of be on all four.
Oh, yeah. Well, we know all about that. We do. Hey, give us that link again.
The name is hornauction@gmail.com. And guy, I want to specifically tell people that if you are interested in selling, I get back to you really fast with a response. If you don't have the resources to do that, don't worry. But we're gonna find a way, people, for you. We're gonna find a way for you, listening, you who says I don't got the resources to fundraise. We're going to find a way. Oh, we're going to find a way if you have that time on your hands. Because all we need, guy, and this is a good strategy, and this is the first tier of what I consider the new fundraising phase. See, I want people to understand, this is just the beginning of fundraising. This is just one. So that's what I mean by we can basically pay for your on-locations and remotes if we all work together like this. And beyond. I don't know how much. It's a floating question mark how much we could raise. And that's the great thing. But I wanted to open the door to fundraising because I think it's time. We've tried to get people interested and to contribute, but we keep barely missing the mark. And now it's time, guy. It's time to kick down the door and don't take any names and just start kicking ass when it comes to getting rid of this debt.
Well, hopefully we will. Thank you for your help with this. And
not a problem, guy. And I just want people to understand, I'm challenging people out there, all people. I want you ready for the Christmas rush. We can get you up and running, and you can sell something that you never, ever thought of selling before, and you will be helping keep something alive. You will be helping keeping something, sustain something physically just by your efforts. And at the same time, who knows, you could even have yourselves a side business that you would never imagine just by getting involved and just, and also with the trial and error that I've taken on eBay, I know different steps and different routes that will save you money, be costly, a strategy, how to get traffic, on and on and on. I will show you, literally, steps on where you can have those, where you can have that traffic and that sales and provide an income for the horn that is much needed. And I think that is a admirable thing, and it's a decent thing to do. And if you, and you know what, guy, it's way past time.
Yeah, it is. We've waited too long. Well, we've been trying for a long time, but we haven't found a way.
I know, and that's why, that's, but see, guy, that's why fundraising, everyone does it, but it's the 21st century. We can fundraise in so many different ways we've never imagined.
HornAuction@gmail.com.
This is the start.
Right?
HornAuction@gmail.com. And I thank you for taking my call. I know you're not supposed to say that on the air, but I like ticking people off by doing that who are listening.
Thanks.
I'm a troublemaker, guy.
Good to hear from you.
All right, later.
All right. Thank you, David, for the call. Good to hear from you. I like that idea. Yes, we do need to get in high gear here with fundraising soon. I know Bob's mentioned it. I've mentioned it. We are that frog in the boiling water right now, and we hope we can get some contributions. If we don't, soon, why let's answer the phone again. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy. This is Juanita.
Hello, Juanita.
So the thing is, we're going to learn Russian?
Yeah.
And say hi to Obama?
That's right. I've been practicing.
Well, what about the verified 11 million soldiers and 66.7 million civilians that the Russians lost during World War II?
Well, they,
what do they think?
Yeah, they got it worse than anybody.
And that, I mean,
yeah.
Isn't it crazy?
It is. It is.
It's like, it's socialism and it's communism and it's fascism and it's Hitler and it's Mao and it's, I don't know what all I've heard. But those people are something else.
Oh, they are. You know, they hear some shtick from a Beck or a Hannity or somebody and they just go out and repeat it. And I think it's so bad to go out and repeat things and you don't know what it means. I don't know why people do that.
Like you said, they probably don't know what socialism is.
Right. They don't.
And, but you know what's sad, Guy, is that a lot of it is in, from church.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I know.
When Gore was running for president, I had a girlfriend I went to school with that we just see each other every now and then, and we started communicating by email. She sent me a long list of these horrible things that Gore had done that she had gotten from someone in church. And one of them was when he said his mother sang "Look for the Union Label."
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
When he was a baby, and I just answered each one of them. And I didn't hear back from her anymore. But I said, you know, that was a joke.
Well, they don't
get
it.
You heard about it. Yeah. And he invented the Internet. These were like things to make you think not to vote for somebody. That's crazy.
Yeah, no, and so many of them were so, as you probably found out, so many of them, those allegations were so easy to disprove. All you had to do was a little bit of thought and a little bit of research, and you could find out the truth on
that.
But most people don't want to do that.
I know it, and it's very frustrating, but you have to learn the hard way that there's people that their mind is set one way, and that's it. And they'll listen to anything that agrees with what they're saying, they're thinking, or not thinking. You heard about Bush's latest job?
No.
Him and Laura?
No.
Motivational speakers.
I'm afraid that wouldn't work for me.
Well,
I don't know how motivated I could get listening to him.
They're going to be with Terry Bradshaw.
Oh.
Robert Shuler.
Really?
And, of course, you know who Zig Ziglar is. He's the main one behind it.
Wow.
I forget who the other people are. And I never will forget, I heard Zig Ziglar on C-SPAN. He had written a book. This was when Bush was in office. And he was just going on and on about how wonderful Bush was. And they said, somebody called in and said, well, what about the way he talks? Said, you're a motivational speaker. He said, oh, I just think it's charming.
Oh, charming.
And then he said, somebody said something about Clinton, and he said, what he did was unpardonable. I remember the exact word, unpardonable.
Unpardonable.
But anyway, I just thought I'd put my little 2 cents worth in about the Russians.
Yeah,
nobody realized.
Russian. I got to get one of those hats, too. You know, one of those Russian hats with the wool around the top and the hammer and the sickle on the front. I don't want to be left out. I need one of those. And those boots. We need to get some
and
of those boots.
And start learning it.
I don't know any words. I'm going to have to learn. I don't think I know any at all.
I know yet.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. I know that one.
I know yet.
Yeah. Hey, Anita, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling.
You too, and I'm glad to have you back.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Generals gathered in their masses, just like witches at black masses. Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerers.
Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network, the best damn network in the country for if you want to hear liberal progressive talk. You got it right here. Bob Kincaid. Oh, Bob Kincaid and I tell you what. Bob and I are invading Washington next week, a week from tomorrow. We're going to go, and then we're going to do a conference that's there, a conference called Making It in America, Building the New Economy. And it's being put on by the Institute for America's Future. And we hope you'll help us out with some of the expenses there. They're paying for travel expenses and stuff, but we need to have some help with some of it. And if you can afford to help, send two nice young men like Bob and I to Washington. Why, we would appreciate it very much. And you can do that at the Head On Radio Network site and the GuyJamesShow.com site as well. We're going to have some interesting people there. Of course, Robert Borisov, the head of the Institute for America's Future, is going to be there. Harold Meyerson, columnist. Let me see who else is going to be here. Representative Earl Blumenauer. Let's see. Richard Trumka, the new president of AFL-CIO. Jim Webb, Democrat of Virginia. Sherrod Brown. James Clyburn is going to be there as well. We're going to have some interesting. Governor Ed Rendell is going to be there. And Representative Rosa DeLauro, Democrat from Connecticut. So we're going to have a great group, and we're going to be covering the entire thing all day long. Bob and I, it starts at 9:30 in the morning next Thursday morning, and we're going to roll into town Wednesday afternoon sometime. Washington, D.C., where are you two going to be eating, Guy? Well, we might stop by that all-you-can-eat beef place. We might. Oh, yeah, we might. We do have a lot of fun there. I want to tell you, I am lucky to have a relationship with Bob. Bob is a friend. Bob is a colleague. And Bob's a hell of a guy. I just tell you, he is. To know him is to love him. That's the truth. Bob is just one fine guy. He's just full of all these local. As you know, you listen to his show all the time. I don't know how he's remembered and stacked up all these local southern colloquialisms over the years, but he's got a million of them, and he likes to pull them out. But the only trouble with Bob is when we go to Washington, D.C., Bob, I mean, I like to walk, don't get me wrong, but that guy walks like, you know, 8 miles an hour, and I'm like three. And it's tough to keep up with him. Boy, does he go. He's a lot younger than me. He doesn't understand. I've talked to him about it. But anyway, we are looking forward to that, and we will have a good time. And the health care thing will still be going on there. And, you know, and it gets me when I hear him talking about health care reform. This isn't reform. It really isn't reform. You wait. It's not reform. This is merely an early Christmas present to the insurance companies. And once again, you and I have been sold downriver by our elected representatives. If anything else comes out of it other than that, I'm going to be shocked. I'll drop dead. You know, are we the people going to take this lying down? The answer to the question is, yeah, sure. We're going to take it. Home of the brave. Come on. And, you know, incredibly, the Democrats are still contently walking around under some sort of a delusion that they remain the party of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And really, their behavior this week has been shameful. It's another reminder that the party's just becoming pathetic, and it needs to become completely overhauled. Need to give that donkey a good spanking, I think. But you know, were you aware of the fact that in countries like England and France and Canada, people over the age of 65 are advised not to vacation in the United States? I've talked to them. They've been advised not to vacation in the United States because if they get sick or injured over here, it could cost them everything they own. And that's a nasty little reality of the America of the first decade of the 21st century. Don't believe the conservatives when they try to make you believe that they hate our guts over there. Europe does not hate America. They love the contributions that we've made to the rest of the world. And let's face facts here. How dreary would this poor old planet be without the good old rock and roll and James Dean and Billie Holiday? They really do love America and the American people. It's our government they can't stand. And they hate our government almost as much as the conservatives do. I know people from France to come here to visit, lovely people. And they don't call what we have here health care. They call it hell care. And they'll tell you, in short, in the U.S. you pay more, you get less, and you die younger than they do in Europe. Now, I just ask you, what part of that don't you understand? Hello, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, Guy.
Yes.
JLL told me to give you a call, man. You're giving you a call about some pacemaker issues. You were talking about the health care reform stuff?
Yes.
The one that called Bob Kincaid show about a month ago. Well, actually, I guess about 2 months ago. In August, about the pacemaker issues.
Mm-hmm.
And not being able to get my new pacemaker.
Yeah.
I was just at my electrophysiologist yesterday.
That's a mouthful.
It is.
Electrophysiologist.
Who seems to think he is a cardiologist on top of it, because he proceeded to tell me my cardiologist erred in his diagnosis that my bleed wires on my pacemaker are failing and causing a problem with my pacemaker, and refuses to do anything until my pacemaker has less than 1 month battery life left on it.
Oh.
And is actually sending a letter to my insurance company reflecting that. So he's basically going to block any help I may be able to receive. Now, Sophie on the chat room gave me a website to go to last night, God love her. There was an awful lot of conversation in there, actually, about the pacemaker that I have, which is Medtronic Kappa, and people that have been told, oh, you have 6 months left on your battery, and 2 weeks later they're in the emergency room after having passed out because their battery went dead.
Oh, man.
And this is all Medicare issues, and this is all Medicare issues thanks to George Bush, not Obama. These are all Medicare issues that were put into effect in January of this year.
Wow.
Because in 2001, when I had the pacemaker I have now put in, I actually had a year of battery life left on that, on the old pacemaker. But because of my underlying health conditions, Medicare approved replacing the pacemaker.
2001.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had the same one since?
I've had the same one since.
And how long does a battery actually last?
7 to 9 years.
Really? I didn't know that. You're giving me an education here. But
yeah, 7 to 9 years. It depends on how often you utilize it. And I utilize mine quite a bit, unfortunately, because I have an average heart rate of my own of 22 beats per minute.
Of what?
22 beats per minute.
22?
Mm-hmm. All so right. Without the pacemaker, I typically would be functioning on 22 beats a minute.
So what does the pacemaker take it to then?
60.
60, okay. And even that's not real high. The average person's is higher than that, isn't it?
Yeah, usually. It depends. You know, they have different resting and active, criteria. You know, like active, you can go up to 120. Like, mine is restricted at 125. My heart rate can't go above 125.
Oh, okay. Wow.
But, you know, I have a complicated pacemaker also. I don't have, you know, they have different types of pacemaker. Mine operates both chambers of my heart. So when you start talking about a lead problem and a lead wire shorting out, well, then now you don't have the two chambers of your heart operating together, and you've got some serious problems.
Well, tell me, why would this electrophysiologist give you this problem? What is his reasoning for this?
The only reasoning he gave me is this is what I do for a living, so I know better about the pacemakers than the cardiologist. He deals with just the internal functioning of the heart.
Now, if you're talking about a 7 or 8 year battery life in one of these, and you're down to a month, that's a very, very small percentage.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to gamble with that.
Last month, when the pacemaker was checked, I had less than 5 months battery life left. Which, by math, that leaves me less than 4 months. And if my lupus decides to flare and goes after my heart, that less than 4 months can turn into 4 days in a real fast hurry.